are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
game is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Simple case first, where we just have a piece of wire and the current flowing, but there's a bit of confusion about which way the current flows. If we imagine a bunch of electrons moving along this wire, so I'll just draw little negative signs to indicate the electrons, and let's say they're moving through the wire in this direction. Well, electrons are negative, and negative charge moving to the right, it turns out, is exactly the same thing mathematically as positive charge moving to the left. So you could imagine electrons moving through the wire to the right, which is really the case, or you can imagine little positive particles moving through the wire to the left, which is not actually what happens, but which is mathematically identical. Negative stuff going in one direction is exactly the same thing as positive stuff going in the opposite direction. And electricians and people who work with electricity, and most physicists as well who deal with this, tend to prefer to think of the charge as positive. And so we have this, what we call conventional current, because this is by convention, the way it's always been done. Originally, physicists didn't know if it was positive or negative charge moving, and they just guessed that it was positive. And that convention stuck. So we have what we call conventional current, which refers to positive current flowing through the wire. Even though that doesn't really happen, it's electrons that move, we can pretend like it's positive charges moving. Just pretend like they're going in the opposite direction. Now, we said earlier that the symbol for current is I. So let's draw this as, I'll write I here for electrical current. And we'll imagine positive current flowing in this direction. And when we figure out the shape of the magnetic field around the wire, we think of it as the positive current flow. And we use what's called the right-hand rule. And this gives us a way to picture the direction of the magnetic field around the wire. And here's the right-hand rule. You imagine taking your right hand and placing it over the top of this wire such that your thumb, and that's not a real great hand, but just go with it here, such that your thumb points in the direction of the current flow. So imagine putting your hand right there, just laying it down on top of that wire, your right hand, such that your thumb points in the direction of the current flow. Then your fingers would naturally curl around the wire in this direction. And that is the direction of the magnetic field around the wire. So I'll draw that like this. The magnetic field lines are really these circular lines around the wire. But we know which way the field is pointing by the right-hand rule. And you could draw more field lines further out, and they would spread out more further away. But it's hard to draw more and keep your diagram reasonably neat. But something like that. That's a visual picture of the magnetic field around a current-carrying wire. Now, it gets more interesting if we think about the magnetic field around a loop of wire. And this is tricky to draw, but let me give it a shot. Let's imagine and try to picture this in perspective. Here's a piece of wire, and then imagine it forms this loop like that. And let's imagine current flowing in this direction. So it flows around the wire like this. So these little arrows represent the direction of the current flow. So it goes in the wire there and out the wire there. Well, if you use the right-hand rule, and say you come over to this section of the wire right here, and you put your hand under it, like you're reaching under it to lift it up, so the thumb of your right hand points that way in the direction of the current flow, then your fingers would naturally curl around the wire in this direction. So there's a magnetic field around the wire in that direction. And if you go around the wire and continue to do that, you get these little loops representing the direction of the current flow around that wire. So it looks something like that. Not particularly easy to draw. But what you notice is that everywhere inside the wire, if you picture this correctly, everywhere inside the wire, the field is upward. And then everywhere outside the wire, the field is downward. But outside the wire, as you get farther away, it quickly weakens. And inside the wire, you get this nice strong magnetic field in one direction. Now that leads us to the idea of the magnetic field around a coil. So if you imagine, instead of taking a loop of wire, take a wire and then run it around in a loop numerous times. So you have this coil, and then you send electric current in one end and out the other, what you get is a lot of magnetic field all around that wire. And instead of just just one loop, you have many loops, and the magnetic field from all of those loops add up, and you get all of these magnetic field lines inside. You get a very strong magnetic field inside, and then these field lines loop around like this. And it's very much like the magnetic field around a bar magnet. And this essentially is a magnet. And you end up with a magnetic north pole at one end and a south pole at the other. And this is what you would call an electromagnet. It's a magnet made from electric current. And it turns out that it really won't be all that strong if you just make loops of wire. Now, it depends on how many loops there are and how much current there is. If you put a lot of wire there and really turn up the voltage, you're going to get a strong magnet. But there's something you can do to make the magnet really, really strong. And that is, put a piece of iron inside the loop. And so one way you can actually do this is take something like a nail. So say you take an iron nail. So here's a picture of an iron nail. And say you take some wire and you wrap it around. And you might wrap it 50 or 100 times. And then the wire runs back out. And then over here you have a battery. And you can do this with a regular flashlight battery or a little AA battery or something like that. Just a little 1.5 volt battery will do it. And you connect the wire to one end here and to the other end there. And so you get some current flow. Current's flowing in one way and out the other. Well, you get a magnetic field produced inside this coil of wire over here. And the iron, it turns out, becomes magnetized as a result. And produces additional magnetic field. And having an iron core in there like that can produce a magnetic field that is thousands of times stronger than if it weren't there. And this is the way to make an electromagnet, is to use an iron core like that. And they can be really strong. You see them sometimes at scrap yards, at junk yards, picking up old cars. You've got this cable coming down and there's this device hanging here. And it's a giant electromagnet. Inside it are all these coils of wire with electric current running through them. And it becomes really strong, and it can pick up an old junk car just by sticking, magnetizing the roof of the car and sticking to it. And they use that to move junk from one place to another in a junkyard. Another way to make a really strong electromagnet is to use what's called superconductors. And you're not going to do this at your house, but it's interesting to talk about. Superconductors have no electrical resistance. If you're trying to make an electromagnet like this or like this, you're limited by how much current you can put in there. If you really turn up the voltage, it's going to get hot and it's going to melt if you really crank it up. But a superconductor is a material that has no electrical resistance. And that allows you to turn up the voltage really high without it getting hot. There's still some limits. There's still some saturation limits to how much current you can put through a superconductor. But it's not limited from the heat, from the thing actually physically melting. And so they use superconductors to make really strong magnets in particle accelerators where they're doing high energy physics experiments, or in some places on a train where they use a magnetic field to levitate a train up off the tracks. It doesn't run on wheels. It just floats just barely above the tracks, held up by a magnetic field. And there's a couple of those around that are done with superconducting materials. And electromagnets made of superconductors. Pretty cool stuff.
Okay, so you're listening to Mad Science at www.chazoozradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. On that page, when you're there, if you like, you can scroll down and click on the People for People Radio link and go over and join their chat room. Say hi to those nice folks also. Then don't forget to check out Wolf Spirit Radio. And so basically what we're talking about today is understanding energy. I wanted to play that deal right there, because whenever you think about energy as far as electricity goes, it's easy to explain it in a mechanical sense. They talked about the right-hand rule, where you put your hand one way and your thumb's pointing in towards the direction of the current flow, and you can actually see, according to the way that it's written, that which direction the magnetic field is actually going. I had a question posed to me about whether or not it would be possible to replace the armature in a generator head and basically keep from having to turn the rotor in the generator in order to produce the same amount of electricity as the thing would have done actually with the rotor. See, the only difference between the rotor and pulsing a circuit like that would be how much resistance that you would get via the lens effect once you started putting this thing under a load. For example, you know, there are generators out there that'll say, you know, 2,500 watt generators all the way up to, you know, 12,000 watt generators or whatever. But nonetheless, this is how much they can usually handle, but you'll notice the only difference between these two particular generators is the actual horsepower of the engine that's actually turning that generator. Because once you put this generator under load, it's producing a second field in that generator head that's acting as a brake on that armature, which is actually slowing it down. And so you have to have a lot more power input to be able to overcome that resistance to bring that generator up faster in order to be able to produce the amount of electricity that you want out of that generator. But as to the answer to the question whether or not it was possible to build a circuit that you know, would replicate what the generator's doing, the answer is yes. Basically, the inverters that you see anywhere from you know, a few watts all the way up to several thousand watts, they do specifically that, basically pulsing coils with circuitry in order to you know, produce the change in polarity that's actually producing that electrical charge. See, it's not that we don't have enough energy, it's just that we're not using the energy at its maximum efficiency. If you can understand the mechanics of how electricity is actually traveling, regardless of whether you think it is, you know, somebody just distracted me, sorry about that. Doggone it. I hate it when that happens. I gotta stop looking at things. Alright, so my brain just fell apart. Sorry about that, folks. So anyway, when you're pulsing these deals, if you understand how this energy is actually traveling, then that'll give you a mechanical sense of how you can redesign your transformers and such in order to get the maximum amount of that energy usage out of it. We waste a lot of energy with the way that we pulse these transformers and even electric motors for that matter, because the mainstream, I guess, they either don't understand or they don't want them to be really efficient. Otherwise they would re-engineer these things to use less energy on the input side. So if you got an understanding of how this energy is actually traveling, and basically the way that they explain that right hand rule, it's probably could be explained a heck of a lot more simpler than what they said, you know, putting your hand on there and pointing your thumb towards the direction of which way the currents flow. The right-hand rule would be simpler explained if you're looking down a straight line and you point in that direction and you rotate your finger to the right. That's which direction the magnetic field's going. That's the short and simple of it. It's not rocket science, but they make it seem like it really is when in fact it's not. All you're doing is pushing energy around. Nature wants to remain in balance. If there's this many electrons on this one, there has to be that many of electrons on the other. Everything's got to be equaled out. and different materials act differently under different circumstances, whether it be chemically or temperature-wise or whatever. And so once you've got all those physics figured out of each material and the way that you're actually winding these coils, forget all the mathematic equations. Just to understand how the energy is actually traveling to begin with. When you put a current through a copper wire, instantaneously you throw that wire off of balance. Well, as those electrons are trying to find their way, you know, to wherever it is that they're going to be stable again, they're traveling around in a spiral down that wire. You're using that wire as a railroad track, so to speak. Now, there is some math involved when you talk about how many voltage, how much voltage is going to be, or how much current, and you know, and the watts and all that kind of stuff. There are some, you know, math involved when you're trying to calculate up how to wind these transformers to begin with. But basically, if you got one turn of wire going around the circle, and there's so many volts involved in that right there, depending on the thickness of the wire. Whether it be like thin wire for, you know, pushing higher voltages, or thicker wire for being able to handle larger current. The next loop in line, those two magnetic fields as they pass each other are going to combine, making that field stronger. That's why you have so many different turns on your transformer, to make that field stronger. And so, you know, if you can visualize that first circle that I talked about with the energy traveling around in a circle going to the right as far as your magnetic field, so now you know which direction your magnetic field's turning, and you'll know basically which way you can actually guide this this energy to wherever you want to go. So the next one in line, the same process is happening, and it's actually producing one field from the two fields are actually combined to each other. So it makes a stronger field. The more turns you got on this, the stronger the field's going to be. And even on smaller, you know, larger wires, but or thicker wires, but yet less turns, where you're able to push more current through there, you can get a really super strong magnetic field out of a few turns of wire. And a lot of current involved in there. And so that would be for, like, on your primaries, like on your basically your microwave oven transformers, or any step up transformers that you got out there's going to have thick wires with less turns in the secondary, and that's going to handle the 120 volts to 220 volts AC that we use for our standard electricity coming out of the wall. And then we can either step that voltage up, dropping down the current, or we can step the current up, dropping down the voltage, or step it up or step it down, either way, by the number of those turns that we put on there. So even though you might not be like really into electricity, it's so ridiculously simple when you think about it, that your average Joe should be able to understand what it is that I'm talking about. It's like watching plumbing, you know. When you got your really big pipe, you can put a lot of current flow through that pipe. And if you want to, you don't want the current flow, but you want to be able to raise the pressure up, then you reduce that pipe down to half its size or even smaller. And the smaller you reduce that down, the higher that pressure will become, and basically be able to shoot that water, you know, a lot further across there. Like when you got those little nozzles on your garden hose and you turn that thing up and you get the water that squirts all the way across the yard, or putting your thumb over the end of the garden hose to do the same thing. That's exactly what electricity's doing. And so you're getting on real thin wire, a really super fast spiral of electron flow going down that wire, but it doesn't have enough room for a lot of current to be going at one time. So your voltage pressure and everything goes up. So now you got high voltage. And on the opposite side of the spectrum, when you want to raise the current up, you're going to use a larger pipe so that you can allow more electron flow around at the same time. So the more number of turns, the stronger your field's going to become, and you can keep a constant flow of a lot of current in that winding, in that coil or transformer, whichever you're using. So anyway, I posted a video in the Super Chat Room, the latest video that I did, because I'm going to be doing some experiments of using a signal generator to pulse transformers, different types of transformers, to find the greatest efficiency. And intentionally, I'm wanting to use very low amount of input voltage in order to see the maximum amount that I can push out the other side, and to basically try to find the best configuration of a transformer that will be the most efficient using that transformer. The particular signal generator that I'm using is a DDS signal generator slash counter, and it has the capability going from the hertz range all the way up to the kilohertz range. And so I'm using this. It's actually a 120 input, but this has a little transformer in there, a little step down transformer. By the time it comes out of that power source, it's only requiring 5 volts to actually run. Let me actually look at the voltage itself. Let's see what it says. And Brian, I can't even read it, so small. Anyway, it's about 5 volts DC, 5 volts at 1 amp. Alright, so I know I got a starting point. It takes about 5 volts at 1 amp to run that circuit. So there's my starting point as far as my measurement. And I'm going to take that 5 volts at 1 amp and see how far at different frequency ranges that I can actually push 5 volts at 1 amp to see that if I can do a few things that I theorize possible as far as taking that voltage and bringing it right back up to, you know, usable current. Not necessarily getting out more than I'm putting in. That's not what I'm trying to say. But what I'm trying to explain to you is that it's all the same exact energy, no matter how you're looking at it. It's all the same exact energy. It's just either moving faster or slower. And we waste the majority of it through the transformers and resistance that energy is going to meet, that transfers that energy that you're using into heat energy, which, with electronics or electrical, that's wasted energy unless you're recycling that energy, which is something else that we'll be talking about as well. So that even if you're generating what they call eddy currents in the transformer, you'll still be able to use that heat energy that would otherwise been wasted. And the eddy currents is generated in that transformer is making that heat because you're putting too much energy to that particular material. These, like the laminate cores inside these transformers, they have a resistance to them. And resistance basically equals friction, which in turn equals heat, because you're trying to cram too much energy through there. The reason why we use cores in transformers is because we want to be able to control the time of that magnetic field to make that magnetic field stronger, because whenever you pulse the coils, it magnetizes the transformer core. And that magnetism basically holds for a little bit after that pulse stops and allows it to slow it down and make it stronger in the process. So, we use metal laminates for that purpose. So, because it's once you put that magnetic field, all the little atoms and electrons in there try to line up to that magnetic field, whichever direction the polarity is going on it. And when that energy is released, that's what we call electricity. And it's basically building a really strong magnetic field and pushing that magnetic field. It's like taking your finger and tapping it in a pool of water, and you see those ripples going across there. And the more frequently you tap that water like that, the more those ripples get to going, and you'll start to notice that there's an energy buildup, and that would be the equivalence of the voltage being ramped up in a step-up transformer. So, don't try to think of electricity in a really high-tech, high terminology way. Think about it in the simple, because it really is simple. Nature wants to balance itself out. We throw nature off balance, and when we do that, when nature slaps back into place, you know, with the whatever types of materials that we're using, then it releases this energy that we call electricity. And in the process of using any type of energy, you generate heat from friction. You know, you're pushing energy through a medium such as the air or materials like metal or whatever, and that resistance that it meets up is causing that heat energy. So that's another plus. That's something we actually know about. So we have all the understanding of how energy is actually traveling as far as just electricity alone. You know, we could actually take these pretty much these same concepts and go into just about any other type of energy, whether it be burning firewood and all that kind of stuff. Whenever you're burning something, you know, you got all these molecules that are slamming into each other that because they've been energized by a power source, which is the heat itself. You know, the fire, it's burning and everything, the energy is being released, and so you're actually getting heat that is causing visible light. You know, you got a big old fire going on or whatever. But it's all the same energy nonetheless. And once we get a good understanding of that and understand that all we're doing is when we're putting power to a current, the frequency that we keep talking about is the speed at which we energize something. 60 hertz isn't really all that fast. 50 hertz isn't fast. But yet it's still enough to produce the power to, run our appliances and stuff. I actually believe that, anything under 50 hertz will make something run slower, but yet it'll still run nonetheless, because all it needs is for those fields to be able to interact with each other. The opposites will attract and the positives will repel itself, each other. And so, the answer to the question that was given is a definite yes. You can modify, once you know the directions of these magnetic fields and you understand that these magnetic fields, the coils, are only looking for a change in polarity. That's all they care about. They couldn't care less about where that electromagnetism came from, or whether it even be mechanical magnets. You know, we got strong permanent magnets or ceramic magnets or rare earth magnets or whatever you want to call them. Nonetheless, they're charged, and they have a north and a south pole, and so it's waiting for that north and south to change places back and forth. It's changing the alignment, and they're producing a magnetic field in that coil by the currents that's actually flowing through there. And how fast you do this, excuse me, let me get a drink of my coffee. That's why I need somebody else to jump on here with me, so I can breathe once in a while. Anyway, so how fast you do that is the actual frequency. That's what you keep hearing about, frequency. It doesn't matter what type of, even in the spiritual realm, when people are talking about frequency, because everything in existence is energy. It has electrons, protons, neutrons, according to the electron theory and the theories of the atom and such. But nonetheless, it's all energy. And so when you tap this energy, you get a response. So everything out there has a resonance to it. Everything out there has a frequency to it. Even inanimate objects, even though you would think that they didn't, there's still a resonance to that inanimate object. There's still energy potential in that particular object. And if you can vibrate whatever material, you can cause a reaction in there. It's like the opera singer singing at the glass, you know, a crystal glass or whatever. That glass will begin to vibrate once you match that resonance. And when you do that, depending on how long you do it or to what extent, the glass will start to vibrate. And if there's any type of flaw in that glass whatsoever, even being microscopic, that it will find that flaw and it will cause that object to break. So since, you know, maybe whatever mankind's ever made is at perfection, you have the potential of literally using just sound frequencies alone, acoustic waves, to literally vibrate and shatter things apart. You know, it's kind of like that back in the old days when they used to run around with open headers on their cars, and they go down the deal, that acoustic wave would vibrate all the glass, and actually in some instances blew the glass out from just the pressure alone. But some of which was actually because exhaust system actually met the resonance of that glass and caused it to vibrate so hard that it finally shattered. So, you know, that's a potential energy just in sound alone. You can transmit energy not just with, you know, like a magnetic field pulsing, but you can also transmit energy via an acoustic wave, of the sound wave that goes out. You can actually transmit electricity with sound waves, because when this sound wave is going, it's a wave going out. When it gets to the other side, when this vibration hits whatever type of system you got built on the other side, whether it be a piezoelectric crystal style system or, you know, some sort of diaphragm speaker, that basically pushes that diaphragm from that acoustic wave in and out and passes those coils back and forth through a, you know, magnet or whatever, producing electrical current transmitted onto the other side. So you could, by using sound waves, send pulses out. Well, heck, proof positive is what I'm doing right now. I'm sitting here talking, and I'm not connected to that speaker, but my voice is traveling. It's vibrating the piezoelectric crystal in there that in turn is producing electrical charge that's being transmitted into information and sent out through the network to, you know, you be able to hear. And your speaker system is basically reversing that and bringing it back and producing an acoustic wave that you hear audibly through your ears. So we understand how all that works. It's just a matter now is to getting the right people together to engineer, really super efficient, generators that would benefit everybody. You know, what's the whole purpose of all this talk about free electricity anyway? It's not just in free electricity. It's actually in uses of all of our resources, whatever we've got around here, and the knowledge that we got about, you know, even in the medical industry. Some of the frustration and the reason for mad science is the fact that, we have answers. We have solutions to problems out there in this world that could be easily resolved just by a simple understanding of how things work. Whether the body be a chemistry set or a machine or whatever, once you understand the basics, which we've had hundreds of years worth of research that have been compiled, it's all out here on the internet. We're sitting here, like my friend Steve said, with the vast sum of all man's knowledge at our fingertips, and yet we still got problems in the world that we can't seem to resolve. You know, my mind works mechanically, so when I see a problem, I look at it and I think about, you know, okay, what's the cause and what's the effect and what's the solution? And so when I hear, you know, this, when I go through this in my mind, I bring it out here and pass it on to the people so that they can actually, you know, act upon that the information to do something with it. So the frustration of knowing that there's supposedly problems in the world that we can't seem to get resolved, and knowing that the solution's there, is the reason why mad science is here. You got science guys out there, supposedly science guys that have been, researched and went to college and you know, got positions of notoriety in the doggone colleges or society or whatever, and these folks can't seem to get their act together. I mean, if they could get their act together, if they could just even have a simple understanding about nature and how energy travels and what it is we're doing, you know, chemistry-wise or whatever, it's all basically related to the same doggone thing. You know, cause and effect. What you do causes something. You know, I talked about last show or two back, I talked about this whole deal up there in Florida where they had the red tide was getting out of hand. You know, red tide to some extent is a natural thing, but the systems that they got in place down there, from the sugar farms to the cattle farms to even septic systems in people's houses, are causing an effect where it's putting a lot of nutrients into the waterway that is promoting a massive algae growth, whether it be the green algae that then in turn, when they're trying to keep what they have a natural dam, they're trying to keep it from breaking, not a natural dam, a man-made dam that they're trying to keep from breaking from the water pressure when it rains or storms down there, they have to make releases of this water. Well, if this water is super highly nutrient rich and they're rushing it down, you know, two different directions towards the Gulf of Mexico on one side and the other side of Florida on the opposite side, whatever ocean that one is, either way, they're now flushing all this highly nutrient rich algaes down through these waterways, and there are different biological entities, even algaes themselves, that can live in fresh water, and there are those that can live in salt water, but they can't go vice versa. So the green algae is not going to be able to live in the salt water condition. So when it gets down there, it'll begin to die off. But nonetheless, it still hasn't lost its nutrient value. So now this green algae is basically in the fresh water, turning the fresh water portion green, and then towards down the salt water, basically feeding the red algae that is blooming out, and in that process is actually causing you know, fish die-offs and such. So when you got an understanding of the cause, you know there's a doggone solution to fix it. The same thing in the alternative energy community, and the same thing in the medical industry. There are actual cures for diseases out there. Every single disease out there, as far as I'm concerned, can be cured if you understand the mechanics of what's actually going on. Why it is that the mainstream medical industry continues to basically do the same doggone thing, they're like, I saw a deal on Star Trek where the doctor on the Star Trek, he was went back in time, and he called the doctors back there butchers, because they didn't, basically their concept was if it's not working, cut it out or chop it off or whatever. And you know, he's from the future, so he understood, you know, how the mechanics of how things work, and they were able to heal people. We have those capabilities. And it's really frustrating to me to know that we have the technology to do this, but for whatever purposes, whether you want to go conspiratorial or whether you just want to go greed-wise, greed and conspiracy seem to follow hand in hand anyway. So, you know, regardless, you know, people want to talk about the tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorist, when in reality, if somebody's sitting there pointing out reality, you know, common sense, there ain't no tinfoil to it. And besides that, folks, I don't know if you guys realize this or not, but it's not tin foil. It's aluminum. And, or as some of my friends over there in Europe would say, aluminium. Yeah, well, however you want to pronounce it, nonetheless, it's not tin. The tin is a different type of metal than aluminum. It doesn't matter. Either way, even aluminum has its pluses, so we could do a lot if we just know the materials and their capabilities, how they react under different circumstances, or whether they're conductive or non-conductive. If you go out and look at the technology that's out there, especially right now, You know, we're sitting here, you might be listening in on a handheld device. If you think about all the different types of materials in there and the different types of technologies available for you to be able to hear my loud mouth over this duct tape and baling wire network system, then you should be amazed at the fact that you're even able to hear me and what I'm and understand what it is that I'm saying. So I don't know how to gather the people out there, the brilliant minds, have been trying it in all different types of methods, putting together different plans and you know, special chat rooms to try to get the dream team that I like to call them together to actually build some things. But nonetheless, that's not going to stop me from doing research and keep on testing things, because since the time I started messing around with alternative energy, I've hooked electricity to so many different things and materials that it would blow your mind. I try it before I deny it. I test it. I see what kind of limits I can push on things. And I try to find things that are already on the store shelf, because I understand how the energy travels, and I know what it's going to take in order to run an appliance, such as you know, the amount of current and the amount of wattage and stuff like that. Well, part of my journey through this whole deal has been basically plugging things in, testing it, you know, blowing it up, setting it on fire. It's real mad science where I'm actually testing, and in some incidents, destroying, you know, materials to try to figure out what their limitations are. And I've learned a lot. In the last 20, 30 years that I've been doing this, I've learned a lot about different materials and the best ways to get energy to be able to travel and such. See, back in the old days, I almost had a dream team together, but I ran across a situation where people were getting angry at me because of my terminology. They didn't understand why it is I kept saying certain things when I got in an argument with somebody who was supposedly my good friend. I told them I didn't care about current watts and amps because what I'm doing doesn't require current watts and amps. What I was trying to say back then is the same thing I've been saying now, is that I am studying energy itself. I'm not studying your mathematics and how you measure electricity right now, and that is the drawback that 99.9% of all the alternative energy researchers out there end up coming up across the brick wall. Because they have to find some sort of magical box that can replicate the inefficient systems that we actually have in place today that are running the electrical systems. And it's you know, the way that you're basically wasting more energy than you're actually using makes it to the point where it's like, well, you can never get enough energy out of this in order to do that. It's pure ridiculousness. But if they focused instead of studying you know, the mathematics and the standard model, they spend more time trying to figure out a way to beat the standard model using the standard math and the standard laws of physics, and they're failing. And they're failing miserably. You know, there are certain people who actually exceeded that and were able to go outside the box and produce something, but then you would have people coming in there with the standard math, the standard model, and trying to debunk them, saying, oh, well, you're using more energy than you're getting. One example is electrolysis. When you talk about electrolysis with hydrogen and oxygen separation, using the standard, you know, two plates, a positive plate and a negative plate, and you put a DC current across there, and you got a conductive liquid in between there, salty water, and they're figuring, saying it costs too much amperage in order to be able to separate the hydrogen and oxygen, and so you're actually, it takes more energy to get hydrogen and oxygen out than you're going to be able to use. And idiots like the people on the Mythbusters, who I used to have a lot of profound respect for, had basically came out and, you know, talked about the dangers of, hydrogen technology. You know, they basically pumped pure hydrogen into a carburetor system, an open carburetor system with no flashback arrestor, and they got an implosion from the deal, big old loud boom, and they said, well, that's probably why we don't use hydrogen, because it's dangerous. Well, they should have known better to begin with than to do that, and they also, I'm positive, they knew that they were basically misinforming people. They were lying to people, flat out, for whatever purpose. Because whatever company they work for maybe have stock in the oil company. Regardless, it doesn't matter. But the fact remains that using electrolysis is the most inefficient manner to separate hydrogen and oxygen. You can do the same thing with pressure, heat, and sound waves. It doesn't matter. And it takes less input in order to do that. You just have to understand how that reaction's even beginning, how it's actually even happening to begin with. And what you do, there's simpler ways to separate the hydrogen and oxygen and be able to use that as fuel. But everything that we do out here, all the ways that the power company's sending electricity to us, it's not even rocket science. But they make it seem as if it's so much harder than what it really is. Now, they, in some sense, never really gave Tesla credit for his work. You know, for all the benefits that we enjoy today as far as AC current goes and radio technology and such, they never really gave him the full credit for the discoveries that he made. But nonetheless, they have no problem using his ideas and technology in order to make a lot of money. But they learned from him how to send energy down wires and get to go a lot further, and how to keep it from actually being a fire hazard, such as if you took the same amount of high voltage direct DC current, put it down the same power lines, you'd have enough resistance going on, enough current that could literally catch them wires on fire. The doggone power lines would be catching on fire all the time. Somebody put too big of a draw on it or whatever. You know, there's a reason why we have breaker switches inside of our power box. But nonetheless, they figured out by using AC current, they can fluctuate this current, which would reduce the whole portion where, like back in the old days, there were deals about how people would get too close to a DC outlet for medicine system and a lightning bolt would literally jump out of the doggone socket and shock the crud out of them. Well, AC current back and forth like that, you know, made it a whole lot safer. So it was actually safer energy, and it could actually travel farther because of the way these waves were pushing each other back and forth and out farther. And at higher frequencies, you could send it out even further. So the energy, at whatever voltage it is up there on the power line coming to you, is at a such range that by the time it gets to you, if you didn't have the step-down transformer necessary to slow that energy down, slowing the frequency down, to bring that energy back to usable current for you, you couldn't just connect your house to that wire because it'd burn your house down. It's too much, too high frequency, and it'd eat through the insulation of your wires and start fires. It'd short and arc to whatever path to ground it could find, and you wouldn't fare so well. That's why there's a lot of safety precautions put into place for people that are linemen for power companies. You know, they got to ensure that they understand that power's coming in there at such a high voltage that it has the capability to ionize the air, producing a conductive path to ground. And so when they get too close to it, if they don't put some sort of ground deal on there to send that energy to the ground instead of to their hand, well, then they could get killed. It's a lot of power involved in it. But either way, we got an understanding of how all this energy travels now. So if we could get the right crew together to actually wind coils, transformers or whatever, make custom transformers that would push the energy just like it does now, but do it in a more efficient manner. And even to the extent as to bring high voltage back into usable current could be something as simple as having triple or even more strands running parallel with each other. So instead of winding one turn, one wire 1,000 turns, you'd wind three wires side by side 1,000 turns, which they're all insulated away from each other. And then whenever you put your high voltage in there, it's like putting a couple batteries together. You know, one battery equals 1 volt, and two batteries in series with each other will equal 3 volts, and so on. But what we'd be doing in this incident wouldn't be voltage-wise. You'd be adding the same amount of voltage per wire, but you would be adding to the magnetic field strength for every turn that you had on there. And then all this extra magnetic strength could actually bring the energy from this new, basically high voltage input side down to a low voltage, high current side back to the usable current again. So the same signal that would be sending a really fast, you know, wave of electrons spiraling around through these thin coils of wire. Multiples of these all strand together wound around the transformer would do the equivalence of what you would have done in the reverse, starting from the primary to the secondary. Sounded like somebody banging on my door. Alright, well, let me take a quick break here. I'm going to play this podcast here. This might take a bit. And burn it. Play already.
Electricity is one of our most faithful servants. It gives us light. It starts our cars. Has unlimited in aviation. Circle globe with entertainment. It cooks and refrigerates our food. These represent few of the innumerable applications of electricity. Electricity at work. But what is electricity, and where does it come from? To answer these questions, let's look in on the world of electrons. The entire universe is composed of matter. A basic concept of the structure of matter is essential for the understanding of electricity, because the very force that holds matter together has an electrical nature. There are many different substances, each a combination of some of the 92 known chemical elements. Just as yeast, flour, salt, sugar, and shortening are the ingredients used in making bread, so are the 92 elements the ingredients of all matter. And if one of these elements is reduced to its purest, final form, its smallest unit would be an atom. No one has ever seen inside an atom. However, we think of it as a system of electrons circulating around a heavy nucleus.
All right, sorry about that, folks. Anyway, I wanted you to... The guy just said something really important. Nobody's ever seen inside of an atom. And for that matter, nobody's ever seen an electron. It's a theory. All these things are theoretical, but we do know that what these things, what the cause and effect. When we do something, you know, when we run a current through, a copper and we actually produce a magnetic field, That sudden release of that magnetic field through that back EMF is what is actually producing that electricity. That magnetic field itself is the electricity. And so, you know, if you want to test out what I'm talking about, get you a coil of wire and a 9-volt battery and put both your thumbs on that wire. Put one on a positive, one on a negative, and whenever you release that wire off of that battery, when you first put it on there, you're going to make a strong magnetic field. And you're really not going to see nothing happen unless you got metal in between there, which will actually produce an electromagnet and make this reaction even stronger. But nonetheless, when you keep your fingers on the wire and release that wire from the one of the terminals, and nature throws that coil back into balance, that release of energy is going to shock the crud out of you. And that's what I'm talking about. That's the simple of the whole thing. And depending on how many turns you've actually got on there and what gauge of wire will actually determine how strong that powerful pulse is going to come back to get you. But anyway, we got a great understanding of how energy actually travels. It's really simple. Whether you subscribe to the electron theory or electric universe or any of the stuff like that, every single thing out there, according to the electron theory and the atom, is energy. There's energy involved in it. Lots of magnetic fields involved in it. There are these little electrons flowing around, and the interactions that you'll get, you know, the way that you can actually pick up electrons with your body, using your body like a capacitor, carrying those electrons across to something else that your body wants to put itself back into balance, and that there's something that has less electrons than you have. And you stick your finger too close to it, you'll see an arc shoot across all those electrons, making a path to ground over to whatever object, the metal that you touch, whatever conductive material or even material that has less electrons than you do. Either way, it's really super simple. And so, if we can start to re-engineer things using everything we know about it, then we can actually get systems to work on less input. And that's the whole key there, because everybody keeps talking about zero point and over unity and all that kind of stuff. You don't even need zero point or over unity. Those two terminologies is like looking for the doggone unicorn, you know, the holy grail of free energy devices and all this kind of stuff. And that gives the other side of the fence that don't believe that energy is free, well, it's because they don't have an understanding of basic science is why they even say that, and because they've been indoctrinated by the system to believe that. And so that's pretty much why we're in the shape that we're in right now. Whether it be the oil industry or any industry out there, as far as that matter, these folks want to make money. So they're going to make money by selling a product such as oil. You know, and you even want to make it to be as if it's, hard to come by, it's scarce, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But basic science, once again, comes into play. This is the reason why mad science is around, is that everything out there is energy, and there is no such thing as fossil fuel. And so everything in this world, being carbon-based and biological life forms or whatever, all have chemistry in them. And whenever something dies and rots, it's releasing energy, and basically it's also releasing chemistry as well. So all these plants, anything, grass clippings, all different types of plants, anything biological, animal life, people for that matter, all combine into that chemistry, and in the right circumstances with the right temperatures and right pressure will quite literally produce what they call crude oil. Didn't take billions of years to do it. This is the big great myth of all the energy out there, that it took millions of years or billions of years to produce certain materials that have been proven otherwise to be able to be reproduced in a laboratory setting in a fraction of time, weeks at that, sometimes hours. It depends on which material you want, depending on how you make it. We know how to make biodiesel. We also understand, you know, the oil itself, that you can actually cook the oil and make it look dirty. So imagine this oil being produced from everything from, you know, different animals that died and the chemistries absorbed down into the ground, or even algae for that matter. And then they're getting temperatures that are pretty high, and this oil's actually cooking, and so it gets all black and cruddy looking, and is built up to such extremes that it's like really thick crude. There are wells out there all over the place that basically they don't use these oil wells. They're supposedly part of the national reserve for, so we don't run out of oil one day. And then there are wells out there who have actually been, you know, drained dry. And then years later, they come back and they're full again. And that's because nature's still doing what nature was doing when the oil got there to begin with. And so, I keep saying crazy stuff to people all the time, and they don't seem to get it. There isn't anything in this world that you're ever going to be able to run out as far as resources. Nothing. You're not going to be able to run out of water. You're not going to be able to run out of crude oil. You're not going to be able to run out of anything. As long as nature keeps doing what nature does, if you don't mow your lawn for a year, you got a forest in your yard. So, you know, nature always takes back what you don't use. Nature always puts things back into balance. You throw nature off of balance, and there you go. You got an energy that's coming back at you. And we get work done in the process. It's all so ridiculously simple that it's mind-blowing. And, you know, I get aggravated because people out there, you know, want to try to make this as harder than what it really is. It's not. It's not difficult at all. You know, maybe I don't always have the proper terminology to say it in the way that's going to please them because of what the school book said. But what I do have is an understanding of how this energy is actually traveling and what you can actually do with this energy. And when you sit there and you look at it in a mechanical sense, it makes it so much easier to be able to begin to engineer a solution to using the energy in a more efficient manner. That video that I posted up there in the chat room that talks about efficiency, the video's name's How Far, it's on my YouTube channel. Basically, how far can you push it is what, you know, how far can you push efficiency? And I'm going to be doing a lot of videos like that, and I'm going to be posting a lot of different styles of transformers with a lot of different styles of circuitry to find the most efficient way. Like, for example, if I'm going to be using transistors or MOSFETs, I know that at a certain range, transistors and MOSFETs, if they're drawing too much current, will actually get hot and they can destroy themselves. So I got to find a happy medium in there to where I'm not wasting energy through the circuitry and I'm getting the best efficient pulse out there. It could be something as simple as having multiple circuits run side by side with each other and a multi-layered wire system like what I mentioned earlier, where you take three of the same gauge of wire and you wrap your coil with three turns side by side with each other. So essentially it'd be three transformers in one on the primary side, and then you do the opposite on your secondary side and bring that energy back down to a current, a higher current, lower voltage. But that would mean that three low input voltages would be necessary to send a high voltage pulse in there to produce a strong magnetic field that would then in turn be stepped back down to usable current again. And the less input that you have to put on the inside, the less work that you have to have this thing do, Nobody talked about a while back where he took his truck that he was driving and he put a solar panel and a charge controller on the top of that truck and was able to save a lot of gas, because if his battery stays charged, then the system won't tell the alternator to kick on, and that alternator kicking on under a load would actually cause the gasoline engine portion of it to have to work harder, therefore using more fuel. It's the same exact concept, but he had a supplementary system that would keep that battery fully charged while he was driving, and that way, whenever he was going down the road, that his alternator never had to kick on, therefore the energy that was being put into the battery was coming from a secondary source, and not requiring that engine to have to work harder than it would have otherwise, just sitting there what's the doggone word I'm looking for? Just idling, that's the word. Sitting there idling, that's all the alternator was doing. It was idling. It wasn't under a load because it didn't have to charge the battery. And as long as it didn't have to charge the battery, that meant the engine didn't have to work hard. So it's really, really ridiculously simple concepts. And then to the extent of the types of materials and how we actually build our transformers, to understand that if you put too much current in the magnetic field, is too strong in either the primary or the secondary, that you'll have a secondary effect such as the eddy currents that will build up in the different types of materials, because those materials ain't used to that much power. We want to hold that magnetic field a little bit longer and make it a little bit stronger, so we use the metal laminate cores, and in higher frequency transformers we use a material called ferrite, because its capability of magnetizing and demagnetizing rapidly over and over again is better, which therefore that transformer will actually stay cooler than the old iron core style transformers. And then it could be the extent of re-engineering even the geometry of the transformers themselves. You know, to run the doggone generator head without using the armature in there, if you understood how these magnetic fields were traveling, and you look inside the way that these motors are made, you'll see that they got what are essentially pole pieces that, when the magnetic field is changing between north and south, there's a gap between each one of them, and it's transferring that magnetic flux in and out of those wires. It goes from north to south to north to south and so on, and all, like I said before, all those coils are looking for is a change in polarity for that magnetic field to be fluctuating back and forth and in getting the electron flow going. So, you could guide the energy to where you want it to go, and using the most efficient circuitry, be able to do it at a whole lot less energy input than what we're doing right now, is basically what I've been trying to say. And even though you've got wasted energy such as heat, that's still usable energy. And if you transfer that energy into a completely different state of matter, like I've been talking about with plasma technology, then you can move that energy away from the generator so that the generator doesn't recognize that energy anymore, and it's not going to come back in and slow down the armature. So the armature, whatever it's capable of doing at a certain RPM, will continue to be able to do it, but it never have that extra load on it to have to make it work harder. And so moving that energy away and understanding that you can turn that energy into a different type of energy, and then turn that different type of energy right back into usable current again on the other side. And even to the extent of knowing the different types of gases, noble gases out there that, you know, aren't going to blow up on you or overpressurize, those particular gases have benefits as well. You know, it's like I always talked about argon. I liked argon as far as being able to energize it into plasma. But neon is one that you can energize into plasma at lower input voltages and frequencies than you can argon. It takes a little bit more to get argon going than it does neon. And even xenon, which is the brightest gas, once it's energized into plasma, it breaks out a white light, whereas neon will put out an orange light, and argon will put out a purple, bluish-purple light. But all of them, at the right frequency, will put out a really bright white light. And so the more power that you're putting to it, the more bright they'll actually get, which light is heat and heat is light. So now you've actually changed it into a couple different types of energies all into one. You've actually energized it into plasma state, and you've got heat and light involved as well. So you just took that energy off of there, and you produced other types of energy that could be used in different types of processes or whatever, whether it be to heat up water or however you want to go about it. Nonetheless, once you understand about how you can move that energy around and it doesn't defy any of the known laws of physics, then you can engineer. They got, I have to look it up, ion drive motor that supposedly is in use by NASA that uses xenon gas, and there's other uses out there for xenon gas that, unless you go do the research, you would never even know. They don't teach this kind of stuff in school. The education system basically scrapes across the super basics and sometimes even total disinformation, and basically cheats the students out of some knowledge that they could otherwise come across some great ideas and inventions. We have a education system in this world. You know, there are some places that are a lot better than others. But we have an education system in this world that's quite literally failed humanity. And the science community out there, I couldn't be more discouraged and ashamed of the mainstream science community. Because with all the information that they've been able to have access with all these years, and they can't have a simple understanding of what I'm trying to say, they would call me a pseudoscientist, which is a degrading insult. And if you don't have the fancy white lab coat and the piece of paper on your wall, then your information's no good, regardless of the fact that it's right there in their face and you can show them and prove it. Instead of using the scientific method, they rely on theory. If you don't know how something works, just guess at it or make it up. That's the whole deal. That's why it's all aggravating. That's why I hold NASA accountable, because if you make some really wild claims, then you need to be able to demonstrate that and explain a few things, such as why it is that you're able to send a probe clear to Pluto and be able to get a radio signal to be able to transmit all the way back this way and have enough electricity power on the other side to be able to run said equipment to send said energy all the way back through the deep dark space and Van Allen radiation belts and all that. You're able to overcome all these obstacles to get a picture of something that's so incredibly far away that if you look back at the sun, it's just a little tiny dot in the sky. Well, that's some pretty amazing technology that should be in use to the average Joe, considering it was the citizens of the world that paid the bill for them to be able to supposedly do this type of research. And even to the extent of whatever research they do, and they patent, and all that information belongs to the people. But it doesn't usually end up in the people's hands. Instead, you keep getting electrical companies, energy industries that will go out there and keep raising people's rates and, extra fees for this and that. And it just makes it hard for the average Joe to be able to survive. So my hopes by sharing this information with you is that the people out there will become proactive and actually start researching all these different things. You know, there's a lot of different links here on ShazizRadio.com. There's, you know, we go up to, scroll up in the super chat room. There's a button up there that says Stephen's resource page where Stephen Gibbons went over there and he put all kinds of links to all kinds of different alternative energy researchers and research and devices and such that, you know, even if you go look, at them, and they're not like a fully functional alternative energy solution, but they have things that are worth the looking at. It's all pieces of the puzzle. This one particular device might not work by itself under the conditions that it was designed, and they're trying to figure out a way to get around certain deals in order to be able to make it work. Well, something as simple as a supplementary system from another one that you looked at could give it the extra energy boost necessary to do it, and do it at an efficiency rate that would be mind-blowing compared to the conventional way that we're using electricity. But if you could get this energy independence out there for the average person, then you would actually be able to raise the quality of the person's life. You know, we don't have to go back and live in mud huts and caves and stuff like that. We don't have to give up our technology and, you know, the better lifestyle that we have instead of living outside with the mosquitoes and the snakes and such. We actually got homes that, you know, outside your average, invader ant or spider sneaking in your house or something like that. You're not having them crawl all over your face constantly. We can live in comfort. We can have air conditioning. We can have heating. We can have fresh water. We can have everything we need using the same technologies. We just have to learn how to do it in a more efficient and natural respect, nature's respectfulness to nature than what we've been doing. You know, it's not the average Joe out there that buys the electricity that's the problem per se, but the longer you pay for the power structure out there and, you know, they make more and more money, become, you know, more powerful because of, you know, the money that you basically give them, if you begin to build people industries that are for people, then you'll be able to, start to benefiting each other by, I build a device that uses all the, energy that's moving around anyway. I tap into that and I can run my house off of it. And you help me build that device and then I help you build one and so on down the line. Eventually everybody's house is energy independent. You know, they said something about in California that by a certain year that all these houses had to be pretty much energy independent. They all had to be off-grid. And the way that they want to go about it, it's going to pretty much cost everybody, every single household, at least $40,000 for a system that's going to either have them on solar or wind or some sort of alternative energy so that they can save energy and supposedly save the planet from carbon emissions and such. It's all pure ridiculousness. Because if your average Joe was smart enough, they would have did this by themselves, with their neighbors, and it would already be done deal. But here's the deal. It's a control mechanism where these people, they want you to be off the grid, but they want to be control of the system that you're off the grid with. So either way, they're still going to get theirs. As long as they have the power structure in place, they're still going to benefit. By keeping you in line, if you ain't got your solar panels up to code, then you get fined or whatever. You know, and people that try to go ahead and get off the grid prior and reduce their carbon footprint and save them some money, they always seem to run into this hierarchy that wants to try to say, well, you know, because you're not on the grid or connected to the grid, you're costing the government money or whatever, and they try to figure out a way to, you know, add something there where you got to pay anyway, even if you're off the power grid. So you got to be connected to the power grid. any excess energy you used to be able to sell to the power company, now they don't buy it anymore. Any excess is just freebie to them. So if your system is putting energy into their system, they can use that energy for free while charging you a fee if you try to get off of their system. So they're basically stealing from you again. It's ridiculousness. And people wonder why I call it mad science. You know, in the medical industry, the chemistry set that is the human body, the mechanics of it, when you understand how it works and you understand the causes of why things are breaking down, you know how to fix it. Ain't no different than being a mechanic or an electronics engineer or even an electrician for that matter. You got a part that fails, there's a reason why that part failed. And if you just replace the part, but you never solved the problem to begin with, why this thing even failed to begin with, was it because the particular part you made had too cheap of materials? Was it made quality, or was it because of something that was wrong with the way that you were using the energy was causing it to get hot and fail? It all seems like common sense in my mind. But as far as everybody else out there, I just don't get it. I don't get why the so-called governments of the world, who are supposed to be there to work for the people, haven't sought out people like myself and others that have been saying that there's solutions available. You know, the only plausible explanation is greed. You can't sell cold medicine if somebody cures the common cold. So therefore, you got to have an industry out there, or a regulated committee that's going to, like the Environmental Protection Agency or Food and Drug Administration, that's going to say, well, you can't make such claims, or you can't do this. You got to follow these rules in order to get your product to market. There are natural things out there that nature has provided that if you had the knowledge of, you wouldn't even have to go to the store. You just go over there and pick it, and you prepare it and use it, and you didn't even have to buy it. Nature provided all the cures. It provided all the energy necessary. It provided all the resources necessary. And the people that figured out how to monopolize on it don't want you to have that type of information. So, a group of you should be out there researching every single thing that there is to know about alternative medicine. Every single thing there is to know about alternative law. Every single thing there is to know about alternative energy, like myself and others have been doing. And, you know, you name whichever subject. Every single alternative to the standard way of doing things. You get all that information gathered up and you put it into a nifty little package like Shaziz Radio has been doing. You give people a place to go. To have a starting point. To find energy independence. To find freedom and health and wellness. It just blows my doors off that we've been given so much. And yet, whether it be through laziness or greed, or just not even be willing to look past what the book says, I just can't say anything good about our education system. I have nothing good to say about mainstream scientists, because modern day scientists isn't your Nikola Tesla, isn't Edison or any the Marconis or anybody from way back in the 1800s that did experiments. They're not like that anymore. Now, I know that there are groups of scientists out there that do make a lot of new discoveries, but they work for corporations. They work for governments. They work for anybody who's going to give them the grants or the money. They don't work for the people. The people aren't getting royalties off of copyrights and patents that NASA produces. People aren't getting royalties off of things that corporations come up with. No, the people are being sold products. There, that's it. And some folks would say, well, that's how society works and capitalism and all that kind of jazz. Maybe to some extent that would be, I guess, all right. But, you know, the knowledge out there that's, that these folks are using is a combined resource of all the brilliant individuals that they recognize that they brought to their table to do whatever it is that they want made. And they found these solutions. And gradually it's trickling into the mainstream society via your cell phone or your computer or different new gizmos, and you're so amazed by all these different gizmos that you're missing the point. This technology, all of it, is basically robbing you blind. It's robbing your future. It's robbing your resources. And it's not benefiting the people like you would think. You know, these artificial intelligence things that people keep talking about, how one day, you know, we're all going to become gods. We're going to have computer chips in our head. Well, then you lose your humanity as far as I'm concerned, but nonetheless, these are things that, you know, right now you might actually have a thing, yeah, have a chance to steer off in a different direction. You know, if we're going to have robots, we're going to be in charge instead of the opposite way. The robots are in charge and we're just become slave to some crazy mad science guy. Not mad science, I'll just say mainstream science because they're the stinkers in this one. Mad science is the one you want to check out. Those are like myself. Anyway. Some idiot that thought that one of these days all these robots would serve humanity and take care of us and all that and do our work for us and we could just live happily ever after and tiptoe through the tulips. No, because the smarter these things become, the less important that we become, and eventually we look like a resource to said machine. And we become insignificant. That's a possibility, even as crazy as that might sound. There's a few movies out about it, too. Go out and take a look at it. But I'm thinking I'd rather see humanity in charge. And I'd rather see us to see how far we could actually move forward to see what we could actually achieve. I honestly believe that if we ever decided to, we could quite literally bring about a perfect utopia here on Earth. We'd be able to make sure that nobody did without anything. Everybody who wanted a fresh glass of water could have water. Everyone who wanted a home would be able to have a home. We'd all be able to have food. And it's not going to be under some sort of communist ideology or socialist ideology or whatever. It's going to be underneath an idea of everybody and his brother out there wanting to treat people just like they want to be treated. And to take all this knowledge and share it openly. You know, there's a lot of different groups out there that are basically working together, building little communities where what they're doing is they're sharing resources and they're sharing ideas and doing research together and trying to build something up that other people might one day follow on the grand scheme of, you know, overall, everybody does it. We have that possibility. We've always had that possibility. But we're never going to get it through any type of government, whether it be a democracy or republic or whatever, or communist, socialist, any of the ists. It's all nutty. But if you don't know that you have an option, then you'll never try to step outside the box. And that's what I hope to bring to the table, is to show you that you do have options. And that there are ways that we can make our energy cost go lower. Something as simple as unplugging it. I mean, that's the common sense. If you ain't using it, don't leave it plugged in. But to move forward and be able to know that you have resources available, even salvaged resources such as old washing machine motors, and if you understand how that energy's traveling, be able to use it differently than you would normally, and bring it around and store it, and then bring it into something that, like the AC to, or DC to AC inverter systems. We already have that technology. Now, if you had a battery bank, or battery or a capacitor bank, any storage facility that could take basically junk electricity, high voltage that wouldn't run anything, and you store it as in the form of pressure, and you had enough pressure that would release a DC current out the other end, you could run inverters off of it. And so you just changed it from what would have been junk energy right back into usable energy that your appliances can now, you know, run off of. And then moving farther into the future, you begin to design your appliances to run on less, to be able to be more efficient. You know, what we should, where we should be right now in this time frame is so much further along. We should be so much further advanced than what we are, and we're not. And that's why mad science exists, because supposedly there's people in this world doing without and suffering. If it's true, then people are responsible. The world is responsible. If it's true what they say, that people in this world are starving, then the responsibility lies with the people. Because if governments can't get it done, you know, our Constitution was set up that if our government ever got tyrannical, it gave us the authority, you know, and the duty to actually change said government to a better government. Where I don't think we're actually that, to that point yet. Hopefully we never get to that point. But nonetheless, either way, we still have a choice at this point in the game. But if the governments can't take the taxpayers' money and use it to benefit the people, even if it's the people of the world, you know, for everything bad that people like to say about America, Americans are really giving. I'm talking about the average Joe. I'm not talking about your government or your rich elitist or anything like that. Every time there's a tragedy in the world, these people come together, they reach in their pocket and they give what they got, and they try to help out because they know what it's like. And they would hope that somebody would reciprocate if the situation was ever in reverse. So there are a lot of good people in the United States. There's a lot of good people in every single country out there. And it's the average Joe who can make a difference in this world. Number one, it's just like that deal on the ants. It says basically those ants outnumber us 100 to 1, and when they figure that out, then our way of life is over. And that's the mindset that this world's got to get to. If you're tired of sending your children to war over resources, and that's essentially what it is. Somebody needs to make money, somebody ain't happy with somebody else, and they use every kind of, you know, fear tactics and lies and talk about this guy's got nuclear bombs and he's trying to blow us up or he's trying to take over the world or whatever. They use every single fear tactic under the sun to get you to go out there and kill each other, when in reality, if you guys were sitting here working together over international boundaries and such, you'd already be so much further advanced. If you have streams and creeks that are, you know, basically polluted, you know, don't wait around for nature to try to clean it up. Understand how it actually happened to begin with. Follow it back to the source. You know, once you find the source of what's actually causing it, you understand how the chemistry is getting thrown out of whack, then you can make it better. You can help nature clean it up. Then in the process of learning that, you know, I talked about duckweed and watermelon, and I'm not the only one to ever talked about it. This stuff is it's amazing, but it's one of nature's filtration systems to put nature back into balance once man threw it off of balance. And even in that process, while assisting nature in the cleanup and helping nature get back into balance again, it's still providing yet even more resources. It's providing fish food, it's providing materials for biodiesels, it's providing fertilizer. And if the farmers of the world out there would listen to what I have to say about that whole deal and sit down at the table and just hear the ideas out, they might be inspired to actually use this, what would have normally been a problem for a plus, to basically be able to get free fertilizer for a lifetime of their farm, free diesel fuel, biodiesel, and be able to recycle what would have otherwise been nothing more than waste. If you actually take a look and single every single industry out there, there is so much wasted. It's ridiculous. And I actually put a video out there. I think I did a podcast about it. Basically, the Zero Waste Project or something like that. I can't remember. But anyway, nonetheless, it basically talked about not letting anything go to waste. If you're going to be using a transformer, and that transformer, you know for a fact, because you're going to be drawing a load off and it's going to be getting hot, then you might as well monopolize on that wasted energy and get some useful work done with it. Even taking any internal combustion engine that is using a water jacket that you're circulating coolant through in order to keep that cool. So you're running this generator anyway. You're using the electricity being generated off of it to run your lighting system. And then if you turn around and you use that same generator to run the heating system of your house by using old style radiator systems, you could turn that into an efficient machine. So you're getting a two for one. You're taking away the heat energy from the generator and basically preserving that generator by not letting it get too hot. Plus you're getting electricity off there, and if you use the electricity wisely, then you have electricity running your lighting systems, low powered, non-resistive lighting such as LED, and that generator don't even have to work hard. You might even actually have to try to draw more power off of it by running things longer, because you might want to keep more heat going to that engine. It just had to find a happy medium of balance in there somewhere. But you know that engine's going to get hot. You know that you need the electricity off the generator head, which the generator head, once under load, is probably going to get hot as well. You need to keep it from reaching its thermal breakdown point so it doesn't destroy itself. So you use that generator, the heat, waste heat from the generator head, the waste heat from the gasoline engine, to basically recycle back into the system. And even the exhaust itself. Most internal combustion engines that are on the market today are inefficient. Their carburation systems, injection systems, whichever particular one you got, are not burning fuel efficiently. And so there's actually usable energy coming out of the exhaust. And even to the extent of the vibration and the heat of the escaping gases from the exhaust system produces yet even more energy. You know, I keep saying, if there was ever a case for over-unity, then the internal combustion engine should be that. Because if you take one thing away from that system, that will produce enough energy that it will literally destroy itself. When the engine gets too hot, it will break down the viscosity of the oil, and the oil will get thinner and begin to fail sooner than it would have otherwise. The heat, the temperature itself will cause, parts to begin to fail. In my mind, it's so ridiculously simple, but I just don't know. If you go out there and you look at how your modern day school buses, whether it be a diesel engine or a gasoline engine, doesn't matter. If you look at the energy system that's in them school buses, you might learn a few things. Because it basically explains what I just explained about how to use that same engine for your house to be warm and even cool for that matter for air conditioning. I want you to learn how heat and cool, energy transfer via, heat exchange and such. HVAC. Once you understand that basics of it, you could engineer systems that would use just heat alone without any type of gas in order to, heat up air and pressurize it and then allow it to expand rapidly and give you air conditioning if you needed air conditioning. But during the winter time, when them buses out there, it takes a little while to get them up to operating temperature. But once they're up to operating temperature, those things will run anywhere from 180 to 220 degrees Fahrenheit. And so they have to be cooled. Otherwise, that temperature will keep on rising. And the harder that engine has to work, the hotter it's going to get. And to some extent, if you don't have enough coolant in the system, even during the winter time, they can overheat. Overpressurize the hoses and cause it to burst. But either way, if you actually go look at the bodies of these school buses, they got single pane glasses. They have very little insulation factor to them at all. And so you're basically sitting in a tin can that has been sitting out in the freezing weather all night, so it's cold as all get out in there. And even the seats themselves, the vinyl seats or whatever they use in the buses there, those are frozen, and so they got heat or cold energy that has to be gotten rid of before you can actually be comfortable in that thing. So a lot of times you go out there, you start this thing early in the morning and give it a chance about a half an hour or so to get up to operating temperature and start warming up the inside of that bus. But once it actually gets up to operating temperature, it'll get to the point when you're driving down the road, no matter how cold it is outside, you have to turn the heater down. Otherwise, it'll run you out of there. It gets too hot in there. So that tells you right there and then, if you had an old diesel engine, an old school bus, you could actually take that heating system, put it into your house, run the diesel engine to produce electricity, and while that's producing electricity, use the waste heat to actually heat your house. Understanding energy is the key to free energy. Understanding how it travels, what you can do with different types of materials, melting temperatures, and all that kind of stuff. I understand it. I know how to get off the power grid. I know how to permanently become energy independent. And I'm hoping that, I can put this information out to everybody and his brother so that they can do the same thing. See, before you go making a loud noise to all the governments out there in the world and saying, hey, look, I'm off the power grid, and they'll come like over to your house with the jackbooted thugs and say, hey, look, you're off to jail. What? You wanted me to reduce my carbon footprint, and I just did it, and now you're going to take me to jail for it? Or they're going to seize your equipment and run off with it? No. You need to go by the concept of everybody gets it. Everybody goes off the power grid. And so they ain't going to have enough room in jail for all the citizens of the world. Pretty much. That's about the safest route. Otherwise, you end up like Stan Myers or John Bedini or all the different alternative energy guys that you've heard mentioned on this show and others. You end up getting dying of old age in a motel room and having your information stolen after you're gone by government agencies who claim that you was a nutcase, and they basically come in and got all the information, and then they monopolized on it all these years and could have given the world free energy but chose not to do so because they needed the tax revenue and they needed the job base. See, people don't get it. They not only get taxes from the company, but they get taxes from the person that works at the company via the income tax, and so you're getting taxed twice. Taxed on your labor, taxed on the way in, on the way out, and the governments need that money to survive. They wouldn't have any money if it wasn't for you. If you're not working, you're not paying taxes, there ain't no government. There ain't nobody can pay nobody to work, and so everybody goes home. That's the whole deal. And because there's so much money involved, corporates and industries, lobbyists and all that, will go lobby your congressmen and your senators to get things put into place to put so much red tape in front of you that you can't go off the power grid without feeling the repercussion of the almighty government, the men in black and such. It's ridiculousness. On one hand, they say that we got to resolve these problems, but then when you come together with the solutions, they reject the solutions and try to demonize you and so-called debunk you and reject your ideas. And even some of the people out here on YouTube who claim to think they're really smart or whatever, and they'll sit there and tell you why it is that your device won't work. Oh, that's not free energy. Even the people in the process of seeking free energy will sit there and mock and ridicule and tell you it's not possible because they don't have an understanding. They don't get it. Look, there ain't no holy grail free energy device. There ain't no zero point. There ain't no over unity, and there never will be. The system is set up to ensure that anybody who finds super efficiency, that system will never see the light of day. If you got a system that you can plug into your wall and it will run your the rest of your entire house off of a 110 outlet at whatever amperage you got. Let's just say you got 100 amp service and you got 120 volts AC coming out the wall at 60 hertz or even 50 hertz. And if you can plug a device into that one outlet, and that turns a generating system or runs a circuitry that could run the rest of what you got in your house, and the power company comes along and they say, well, he's only drawing basically the equivalence of a coffee pot or a lamp, but yet his entire house has got power. He must be stealing electricity. You aren't stealing electricity. You're paying for what you got. You're paying for what you're using. But because you understood how to use that energy efficiently and move it around, you could produce more energy doing work that would produce over 12 kilowatts or whatever you needed, that you could run your house off the equivalence of one power outlet. They will do everything in their power to ensure that you're either charged criminally for stealing electricity or that you are suppressed in any way possible to ensure that nobody else knows that they can do that. And if what I'm saying is crazy, if you look hard enough, you'll find a story about a man who did just that. He basically used one outlet, and he built a generating system that would run the rest of his house. So all he had to pay for is what that one particular outlet was providing. And when they realized that he was using more power than he was paying for, they didn't like it. If you look hard enough, you'll find the story. And if you look even harder, you'll even find the stories where people are saying, oh no, that's an urban myth. That never really happened. And they do that a lot. They do that a lot through, shield communities like the Mythbusters who, you know, they'll give you a little bit of the story, but they're not going to let you have the whole story. And that's why the Mythbusters did the stupid thing about hydrogen technology being so dangerous. That's why they lost a fan for life. because they put disinformation out there on the table that could have otherwise showed the perfect fuel system and being able to reduce the so-called carbon emissions that everybody, including them, keep complaining about. So-called climate change. And you wonder why I get mad? You wonder why it's called mad science? Well, folks, that's why. That's why, because we have the technologies available to us right now to produce systems that will do all the work that we need done for a less amount of input, which means that you're not paying near the money that because you're not using as much fuel. And so instead of running a diesel or generator to try to pull electric power, instead of trying to pull run a diesel engine to pull the electric power to run electric appliances that's going to put a heavier load on there, costing you to have to run yet even more fuel through the system in order to get it to get the heat portion that you want, take the resistive heating systems completely out of the equation, run through the water jacket that water, and do what they did back in the old 1800s all the way up to the early 1900s and into the 60s, where they used radiator systems to circulate hot water and steam through there to heat your house. So now you're taking the heat energy away from that diesel engine, and you're taking the need for the electrical draw off of the generator that would in turn make the thing have to use more fuel, and then you use non-resistive loads such as LED systems or even fluorescent bulb systems, and you draw less energy off of that. So that thing could quite literally, a 2500 watt generator could run your entire house. Just because you understood how that energy is actually traveling. Now you understand how that energy is using. If you go factor in what it would cost you just to run an LED lighting system in your house wattage-wise, and then you take away the equation, you're not going to run any resistive loads at all with this generator. You're just going to run nothing but lighting systems in there off of the electrical portion. That generator's not going to have to work hard. And it may be a case that you're going to have to make it work a little harder in order to generate enough heat from the motor itself in order to run the heating system in your house. So what do you do now? Now you plug in a refrigerator and a freezer on there that are two necessities that you need to be able to keep your food cool. So the only thing you're going to run off of this 2500 watt generator is whatever size of refrigerator and freezer and LED lighting system needed to run your house. The rest of that energy that you would have otherwise needed for heating or cooling is going to come from the heat side of the engine, because that heat can actually be transferred into cool so that you can use it in reverse using old HVAC technology, heating and cooling, from heat exchange systems. So one 2500 watt generator could run your entire house if you understood how that energy was traveling, and that if you put too much of a demand on it, you're going to cause this thing to use more fuel. So understanding energy is the key to understanding how to be using free energy. And it quite literally is free, because maybe you're going to go to the gas station and you're going to buy either diesel fuel for your diesel engine, or gasoline for your gas engine, or whatever, and that's the cost that you're going to have to pay, and it could get pretty ridiculous if you was trying to pull a massive load off of that. But what if I said that with this same 2500 watt generator, you could do some things to water, or you could do some things to different types of rotting plant life to actually make gas that would run that same gasoline engines can run off of alcohol. Gasoline engines can run off of butane, propane, methane, and I could go on. And so you could modify these just by the way that you inject said fuel into the system, where you could actually use biodiesels or bio-engineered gases or whatever to run your fuel system. So you'd never even have to go to the doggone gas station, for Pete's sake. If you had a septic tank on your system and you understood that that septic tank, it makes methane. If you have an old pond and underneath that pond there's producing CO2 underneath there, all kinds of different gases are coming up out there as those plants are rotting. Compost heaps and such are releasing energy. So you could build a biofuel system that would run a generator real time. And even if it wouldn't run at 24 hours a day, even if you could only get half a day, 12 hours, you could only get maximum enough fuel to generate for running 12 hours, which is ridiculous, unless if you understand what I'm saying, then you know. But nonetheless, with the proper system, your land could be producing the fuel, could be used in the generator, the gasoline or diesel, efficiently enough that a 2,500 watt generator would be all that it would take to run an entire household. So, Ted, are you there?
I am, Shadu.
So, how's it going, man? We're live.
Nice. Going good. How you been doing?
Oh, pretty good, I think. We're talking about understanding energy today.
Okay.
Once you understand how energy actually travels and you understand the mechanics of it, you understand how you can make it efficient. And so we're past the part of actually trying to gather up all the information. We got every bit of information necessary to build the perfect generators, the perfect transformers, the perfect energy guidance system, so to speak. That's just a matter of, who wants to take that energy and that information and run with it. You know, if something as simple as, in electricity, they got this right-hand rule that'll tell you which direction that your electrical, if your current's going this way, and you put your hand on the wire of the way the current's going, and your thumb pointing out, your fingers will show you the way that the magnetic field's rotating. That, so it makes it sound, ridiculously hard when it's simple as if your energy's traveling to the right, your electron flow's going down the water, you spin your finger to the right and that's where the magnetic field's going, because you got like a vortex just spinning around the outside of that wire as that current's going through there.
Oh yeah.
And then when you figure that out, now you know which way your magnetic field is traveling, so now you know where to put your deal so that your only thing your coils are looking for is a change in polarity. That moves the electrons back and forth and it gets current flow going, gets electron flow, whatever. And then for every pass you put past that loop, that's going to double the strength of that magnetic field. And so if you see how they explain this, two wires equals one magnetic field. Three wires equals a stronger magnetic field. Four wires even stronger. It's as the electrons are flowing around, all these magnetic fields are coupling with each other, and they're making that field even stronger. So if you got 1,000 turns of wire, you got the equivalence of 1,000 times that original magnetic field from that one single turn. You got 1,000 times stronger magnetic field. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
And then being able to understand that different materials will magnetize and demagnetize, and being able to understand about the frequencies, how fast or how slow you pulse something, we want to get the maximum efficiency out of every expanding magnetic field, and then on the way back as that magnetic field's collapsing. Alright, that's going to be our frequency range. By how fast that we do this will determine what the output voltage is going to be on the one side. And to be able to control it, we can actually control the input voltage to speed it up or slow it down. And so I'm doing a video. I've did already one video called Efficiency. Or no, it's called What the heck did I call that? Oh, how far? How far can we push efficiency is the whole deal. But anyway, I'm using a signal generator to, at 5 volts output from the little transformer that plugs into the wall. The 5 volts is all it takes to run that circuit. And so I'm able to run this thing from 1 hertz up to about 5,000 hertz and be able to energize gas into plasma using that 5 volts so far. And I'm going to see how far I can push it, because this particular signal generator will go from 1 hertz all the way up to like 8,000 or something, like, I don't know, I have to look. It might be 80,000 kilohertz or whatever. It's pretty high.
All right, well, so, I'm using the, I'm liking this new neon sign transformer. I got this little 12-volt one. It runs on 30 watts of power.
Yeah. That's how much you have to put in?
That's how much you have to put in to get your 3,500 cycles per second.
All right, well, here's the thing. Try, if you can get hold of one of these signal generators, try to run that. Well, I've got some of them transformers. Maybe I could try it for you, but get one of these signal generators and start off at one hertz and work your way up to scale and see there's a sweet spot in there somewhere. Like I said, these things don't care where that magnetic field comes from. And for every turn of wire, it don't matter if you're using 1 volt or 1,000,000 volts. You only got so much surface area on that one turn of wire. And that's only going to produce a certain amount of magnetic flux. So even at a 1 volt, you could have 1 volt or you could have 500 volts running that same exact turn. That magnetic field is going to be the same size. You see what I'm saying? Because there's only so much surface area for electrons to flow down. It only changes when you get to the second turn, where now that one field is double in strength. But regardless of whether you're running it at 1 hertz or 5,000 hertz, it's still going to be the same exact size of magnetic field. You follow me so far?
Yeah.
So that means that you don't need it near the input to get 1 hertz as you would to be to get from 1 hertz all the way up to 5,000 hertz. I'm still using the same 5 volts. But at some point in there, I can pulse this thing faster or slower and find that sweet spot to get the best effect out of that one particular transformer. You see what I mean? So that the transformer's still doing what I want it to do, but it's not getting hot like the standard, trying to cram the standard amount of current through there, when it's not going to matter how much current you run through there outside of the fact that it's going to burn it in half if you put too much current in there. And that's why these doggone transformers are getting hot. They don't require that much energy in order to produce that magnetic field. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, with that generator, you could actually find out and be able to measure it out mathematically. Once you know that your output is 5 volts at 1 amp, and you're able to produce a certain amount of voltage on the other side, and then be able to step it back down into, if you come anything over that 5 volts at 1 amp, you got some really good efficiency. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So, everything that I'm talking about is all testable. It's using the scientific method. Will prove out exactly what it is that I'm saying. What do you think?
Well, I like what you're saying there. Makes sense. I've never really tried it yet because I don't have a signal generator, but I could probably use resistors and try to do the same thing in a way. But
well, you could actually just use a little rotary switch. It's not going to have the wide range of pulsing frequencies, unless if you can get the whatever electric motor you got to be able to run at like maybe 1 RPM all the way up to 50,000 RPMs, you got the equivalence of a signal generator.
And well, so, what I was thinking is if you're saying, if a resistor can affect your frequency and your voltage. If you just put the right resistor in theory, it might be like a very lucky guess, like a needle in a haystack.
Oh,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
But
well, you can slow the frequency down like you're saying, all right, using a resistor. But you also got to remember that resistor is going to take away from your efficiency. If I'm starting off with 5 volts and I'm going through all these different types of resistance to bring it down to whatever frequency range I need, then that's got to be added into that math equation as well. You see what I mean?
Oh, that's that. Okay.
So, right now, whatever's inside the signal generator can be calculated because it's all in one circuit. We could take this thing, completely dismantle it, take it apart, and we can calculate from the input to the from the AC side to the output, and we can even calculate the draw on the AC side, how much it's actually drawing, and do all the math from point A to point B, just like the book says, and it will tell us where our efficiency is and where our weaknesses are, and we can change those and make them better. But I'm able to energize gas into plasma using 5 volts of electricity. All right,
how many milliamps is that?
Huh?
How many milliamps or amps is the signal generator?
5 volts at 1 amp is what the output of that that little transformer, the adapter that plugs into the wall. It comes in at 120 volts AC. There's a energy deficiency drop right there because I'm using 120 volts AC to get 5 volts, but I could actually build a 5 volt power supply using batteries, so I'm having just a direct DC 5 volts off of a battery system. You see what I mean? And so that circuit in there, I know, only at maximum draws 5 volts at 1 amp is what it takes to run that. And so everything past that, if I come out with 5 volts and 1 amp more, if I come out with anything more than what it took me to run that, that's showing efficiency. It's still not over unity. Even though I'm getting out more than I'm putting in, it's still not over unity. I won't even humor over unity, because it's what people use to try to debunk the fact that it isn't more power that you're getting out. You're using the power more efficiently, and so it doesn't take near the power to do what it is that you're doing. So by the time it's all said and done, if it only takes me 5 volts to produce 5 volts at 1 amp to produce 90 volts at even in the milliamp range, I can get usable work out of that. You see what I mean?
I do.
So they throw all those different terminologies like over unity and zero point in there to basically muddy up the water. And then you'll have people that want to come out there and argue the school book with you. It takes this and that, and you're not going to be able to do nothing with that. Why not? The same book that they're quoting from, The Laws of Physics, says energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So where'd it go? They said there was losses in the system. Well, what if I aren't allowing that loss to become a loss? Instead, I monopolize on that loss to do more work to make that system yet even more efficient. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think your quest for efficiency is, I like it. It's powerful.
Well, that's the only way we're ever going to get it out there to everybody and his brothers, to show them how to use energy in a different manner, more efficiently than before. And to understand that energy that they're using from the get-go is the same energy. When you're producing a magnetic field, you're just tapping into what nature's already, what's already sitting there. And you're basically tapping into water.
Right.
So when
I look at it like with efficiency, then it has to be, so if something's efficient, if you have an efficient system at creating, gas effect like you're saying, well then you have to apply it now to, now that you have an efficient way of lighting, you know, your gas discharge bulb, what are you going to do? It's like, that's the same with the efficiency of the neon sign transformer. Well, the efficiency of the neon sign transformer, to use the high output side and run it through a bridge rectifier and fill capacitors off of it is very effective. So, but what does that mean? You know, okay, it's a very efficient way of charging capacitors at a very low wattage.
Yeah.
And it charges them very fast. But then what do you do with that? And it's like, well, what I think you do with that is you go to your, you know, solar panel battery bank or wherever you got your alternative, you know, power source at, and you go and plug those capacitors into the battery bank so they're always discharging that energy into your battery bank so you can keep your batteries nice and charged all the time.
Let me throw a hypothetical out for you and see if this makes sense mechanically in your mind.
All right.
When we run one of these transformers, we got like an input side that has some thicker gauge wire, less turns, and then we got a secondary that has high voltage that basically turns it into high voltage with a lot more turns at a lot thinner wire. Okay? You follow me so far? So, in that process, we lose current. Because we ramp up the voltage and our current goes down because of the wire is so thin that the electrons can flow freely around this wire, and all these wires to, you know, making loops around each other are you know, making the magnetic field stronger and amplifying that effect. So we can take 120 volts and turn it into 2,000 volts or 10,000 volts or whatever it is we need depending on the secondary. All right, now we got this high voltage that is still moving at this really fast speed. There's still a lot of electron flow, and now we need to bring it back down into current. Well, to understand how that the right hand rule works and how the magnetic field works, we already got to that point when you add more turns, those fields all gather together and they strengthen that field, and now you have one strong magnetic field. Well, to bring that back down again, wouldn't it make sense to take, like, let's say, three strands of wire, and you're going to be inputting high voltage into each one of these strands of wire, which is adding more surface area, but it's not slowing down the wire. It's not slowing down the electron flow. It's able to still travel freely like it does, but now you've got, instead of one field on the output side, you got three fields on the output side sitting side by side with each other, which is adding to the surface area, allowing more, not more current per wire, but more magnetic field as these wires are all combining them, set their fields together, and then dumping that amount of energy that's moving rapidly into a larger wire system that will handle the current flow output of that deal. Did you understand that?
Are you saying that you want to make one of the coils of the transformer kind of like a bifiler or trifiler coil?
Basically like winding them side by side with each other. Like if you're going to make 1,000 turns, you would have 3,000 turns.
Okay.
So you take those 3,000 turns.
Let's put that wide.
Those 3,000 turns would now be able to handle more current flow. But each one of those wires is still going to only be able to handle the high voltage side of it. But it'd be like this. Let's say you got one pipe that's about, let's say, 3 inches in diameter. And then you got three smaller pipes that are only an inch in diameter or whatever. Smaller. Just three of these pipes, three small pipes can fit into that one large pipe. Does that make sense to you?
Okay.
Alright, so if I only had one pipe and I was pushing high pressure through that one pipe, I would never be able to fill up the inside of that pipe unless the other side was plugged up. So I'd still have my high pressure, but I wouldn't have no current. So if I stuck another pipe inside another small pipe inside there, now I'm doubling up on the high pressure and I'm moving more water into that pipe. And by the time I get up to the third pipe, where now the entire pipe is full, all these high voltage deals is able to literally fill in that larger pipe, thus more raising the current back up.
Hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, is that transformer, did somebody already make that style transformer?
No, nobody's made it. But I'm telling you, that's how you could actually ramp the voltage from one single high voltage power source back up to current again. By understanding how that energy travels, you got one strand of wire can only allow so many electrons going through there. You couldn't push a lot of current through this wire. It just can't do it. But in order to get that current that you want, if you've got multiples, like a whole strand of all these wires are insulated away from each other. So you got this big cable that all these high voltage lines can go into. When that hits that one wire, now you've actually got a backup of energy. You've got current flow going again, all from the power, the one high voltage power source.
Have you tried to make that transformer before?
No, I just told you about it. I just made it in my head.
That kind of makes sense. I like where you're going with that.
But you know, it's like the garden hose or the water hose thing. If you got three pipes, that'll fit into one big pipe. And you can only push so much pressure through the smaller pipes when those three pipes are combined together going into the same pipe. Even though they're all insulated from each other, they will add to the pressure inside that pipe, which will begin to back up, and now you've got current flow again. I hope that makes sense to you.
Well, it does, but I'll need to actually that old fashioned try, you know, see what happens there.
Well, it'd be really simple to test. So you take three wires, and so you want to put a high voltage input to the transformer and try to turn it back into usable current again. You take three of these wires that are the same size as your high voltage output, and you wind you up a transformer with three wires side by side, so there'd be 3,000 turns on this, but they're all basically three separate windings in one, just like a bifiler or whatever, all right, a trifile or whatever. And so when that high voltage is coming in, that high voltage is going to travel through all three of those wires. And on the output side of it, now you got three runways where all these electrons can make a path together down through there. And as they're going down through these three wires, because of the way that the magnetic field is actually, you know, using the right-hand rule or whatever. Okay, so when those electrons are spinning down to the right, you're basically making a vortex around that wire all the way down through there. All these three magnetic fields are interacting with each other, making that field yet even stronger. And because you got 3,000 winds, it's not just around these three, it's around all of them at the same time, strengthening that field. So by the time that power comes out the other side, it's not coming out of just one pipe, it's coming out of three pipes. And it's able to bring that current back up again, dropping the voltage down and bringing the current right back up. What do you think?
I mean, like I said, I like the idea.
It's like flushing three toilets in the same house at the same time. It'll overload those pipes. One toilet ain't going to fill the pipe up, but three toilets all at one shot. You see what I mean?
I do.
Water and electricity, the way that they travel. And if you can understand plumbing, you can understand electronics and electrical, because that's all it is switches and, you know, valves or whatever. You're either slowing it down or speeding it up or whatever. Volume and pressure. So, got any ideas on that?
I mean, yeah, like I say, I think that using, like, pressure, so I've always liked the idea of the circuits that people show online and YouTube where they use the relays. And when you open and close the relay, it like has a crazy effect. If you run that open and close through a bridge rectifier, you can get real voltage out of it. And it's a very interesting kind of voltage that seems to fill capacitors up real nice. It's like, well, if you have a capacitor filled up, then you have the application of pressure.
That's right.
So when I think of that, I know that the next thing to do to actually get pressure to work for you in appliances is to know how to make it into the correct, what I like to call the drum beat.
Well,
like playing the drums. You've got to get it all firing exactly right to like where a resonation kind of effect happens, like when people are playing the drum. And then I feel like, with that being said, like, that's kind of a difficult thing to achieve in a way, because if it was so easy, literally everyone would be doing it, because there's so many people messing with the Bedini circuit, they understand all about using, you know, whatever kind of voltage pulse you want, and off and on, a rapid off and on, to create some kind of effect that charges capacitors.
Yeah.
It'll even charge batteries, but it charges batteries weirder. It charges capacitors pretty much regular style, so... It's like, with that knowledge, it's like, well, literally everybody knows that they have all the pressure they need, but literally, if it was so simply to be done to, like, just play this rhythm, and then all your appliances start working because you have all this pressure you need, then, like, you know, kind of like an inverter does, but with a lot more loss, and then it's like, you know, well, then, you know, if it was really easy, really people would be doing it more and sharing it more, but it's not that easy, or if... And I believe it could be that easy, but once you know the trick, people are reluctant to share the trick with other people because, for whatever reason.
Well,
and then it's like,
I believe,
you know, I see this as right now, like really just being utilized when you have a bunch of pressure, just take it to capacitors, like the air conditioner run capacitors, and, you know, then just put, they're not, they, when they fill up, they, and you put them as a constant load on your batteries, they don't fill up so much that it damages the batteries. You can use them, even though they're 370 volts, just get a low microfarad and put one of those on a battery, you know, that's being filled by your pressure, and then you see, like, well, maybe you do have a chance of, like, starting with your light, then moving further. And if you collect up enough old batteries from people, and it doesn't really matter if they won't hold a full charge, it's just at least they got something in them. Keep piling them up. And eventually you'll be able to run that inverter that runs your refrigerator.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's the way I look at it, because, like I say, for some reason people are reluctant to show people how to turn pressure into the correct drum beat to run appliances. And I know people know how to do it. I've seen enough videos out there, I've talked to enough people, but it's one of those things, like, I guess even if I knew how to do it, would I just tell everybody? I don't know. It seems to be a lot of animosity to that.
Well, I'm trying to tell everybody how to do it. I'm trying to get them to do it. I'm trying to get them to try it. You know, if you built a custom-made transformer, which shouldn't be that doggone hard, if you built a custom-made transformer, like a step-down transformer, to literally accept high voltage, that's it. All you want it to do is accept high voltage. And you did it just like these doggone turkeys over here at the power company do. You saw the video how they put together those transformers. And basically they built a combination capacitor slash resistor that slowed that energy down to a usable power again. And then the turns on the secondary was actually putting the energy into the house at the right rate. Well, that's ridiculously simple. Well, you can do the same exact thing by producing high voltage. High voltage is easy to produce. Alright? It's really easy to produce, but you couldn't run anything with it while it's in that state. But like we explained about being able to charge capacitors rapidly with high voltage, you could also take and design a specific transformer to, on the primary side, of the transformer, do like what I was saying with the three-wire system, where you got 3,000 turns of the same size wire, three separate transformer primaries in one, and then on the secondary you have a lower gauge wire. But even on the output of that transformer, you could use that particular wire itself and that many turns to create the resistance to slow that energy down and to bring it back into usable current again. Does that make sense to you?
Well, yeah, there's been a lot of people who show that on videos, I feel like, especially the Gerard Moran video.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when you have high voltage, you can step it down, but, like, the limitation on the people even reproducing that experiment is the cost of the $3,000 piece transformer to do that, because I haven't found a transformer on the, like, average consumer market that's a capacitance, frequency-resisting transformer, like you're saying.
Yeah.
I take it there, transformer is a very generalized term. When you start looking at a transformer, there's I wouldn't say a million, but there's many, many types of transformers.
Oh,
you know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
Well, these ones that I'm working with, I'll have a video out here pretty soon. There's ones that, basically they got in these big old sodium lamp, deals that they got for like, if you go out to like farm areas or even you know, like city malls or whatever, they got those big transformer poles up there. Well, basically these are like 120 volt input and they'll put out like 440 volt output because of the way that they're designed, and they'll energize that doggone either sodium bulb or mercury vapor bulbs, make them really bright. But they're using flyback technology in this transformer, and it, you had to see the way this thing was originally wired and the amount of turns that's actually on the secondary of this thing that would blow your doors off. But it's thick wire, so it's pulling, it's able to push a lot of current. So they're doing similar to what I said just a minute ago, the way that they got this thing wired. And so I'm going to do a video of pulsing this thing and using this one particular circuit. And I actually found that this one particular circuit, the relay on it will actually keep resetting itself because there's not enough windings on the primary. So I got to add another transformer to it just so that this dang inverter circuit will actually run normal without resetting itself every 5 seconds or every second or whatever. So these little mini circuits that you can buy for $6 on eBay are capable of doing a whole lot more than you can imagine. And then you can find the right combination of transformers. I can run a microwave oven transformer and this transformer on that same exact circuit and only using one leg of it, a 120 volt output leg of that pulse DC circuit. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like I said, these windings don't care where the magnetic field comes from. The physics is still going to be the same. No matter if you're pulsing it at 5 volts or 5,000 volts, it's still going to be the same physics. There's only so much surface area on in the given wire. You can only get so much electron flow around that given wire. Otherwise, it's too much pressure. You get what the effect like with a Tesla coil, and you got breakout. And so this electricity shorting anywhere it can go. You got too much power, which would equate to too much current. Next thing you know, the system would burn itself up. So you got to back it all the way down. Run the thing at 5 volts, and you're not using very much energy to put into it. But you're still using the same physics to get the magnetic fields to interact with each other. For every turn of wire, that field becomes stronger. So if I can do it at 5 volts and they're doing it at 120 volts at 60 hertz, which one are you going to choose? Anybody can get a hold of 5 volts. Heck, your little battery backups for your cell phones, those little USB charge style battery backups. Have you seen those?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, you can get 5 volts off of those. It'll run that signal generator. So if I can run that circuit at 5 volts and I can still produce the same amount of energy that it would have been for, you know, regular household current, that's efficiency. It's not over unity, it's not 0 point, it's efficiency. It's using the power that's available efficiently. And you're not wasting it. And if you're not wasting energy, if you're not trying to cram too much energy into a circuit, then it's not going to get hot. If it doesn't get hot, it won't fail. It's that simple. What do you think?
Love it. Absolutely love it. Very nice.
So, If you hadn't seen it already, check out my video that I got on YouTube for, it's called, How Far, where basically I'm asking the question is, how far can we push efficiency? And intentionally I'm starting off with that signal generator and I'm just pulsing the signal. I haven't measured the actual output on the deal, but I know I'm talking about the output from the signal generator, because I know it's probably ramping it up with capacitors and transistors or whatever inside there that's bringing it up at a higher voltage, higher frequency to basically pulse those deals. But I can pulse a triangle wave, a square wave, or a sine wave, and it seems the square wave is the best one to use for pulsing these transformers the way they are. But nonetheless, when you plug that adapter into the wall, it's taking 120 volts AC at 60 hertz and dropping it down to 5 volts at 1 amp, and that is what is required to run that signal. And so there's my starting point right there. And I got all the way from 1 hertz all the way up to, I think it's like 80,000 or 800,000 kilohertz or something like that. So all these different frequency ranges will all do a task. They said it was to, 100,000 hertz, 100,000 megahertz or something like that to energize argon into... basically plasma, and at 60 hertz I'm able to actually, from 1 hertz all the way up, when you're only at 1 hertz it is slow, really slow pulses, but it's still energizing neon into plasma, because neon is the easiest one to get to energize into plasma. It takes less voltage for neon than it does for any of the other noble gases. And xenon is about the equivalence of neon as well, but it's got the brightest light that it'll produce. That's why they use it in light bulbs. Makes a really bright light. Also generates a lot of heat. So, what do you think?
Well, you know, I've always thought it's a good idea to make your own transformer. If you built your own capacitance transformer that restricts the frequency too, would you put earth ground on it?
If I wanted more power out of it.
What about, do you think that them cans, they resist the frequency to 50 or 60 hertz, I guess. I'm not sure which one it is or what exactly it is. But I'm wondering, do you think that the line frequency is always changing and fluctuating, and that it doesn't really matter the hertz that are going in as long as they're high enough, or it'll make the hertz correct at the end? Like there's no ratio.
Well, there's probably a wide range of frequencies coming in down through there within a given span or whatever. But it's pretty close to the same, but there's probably a wide range of frequencies going in there. It doesn't matter, because the only thing that's happening in that transformer is when that high frequency, high voltage comes in there, it's basically like hitting a brick wall, you know, or jumping into some... That doggone ballistic gel, you know, when a bullet comes flying in and it slows that bullet down. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what's happening in that transformer. It's slowing that frequency down. It's not stopped yet. It's coming in at a ridiculously fast speed, but it's slowing that wave down and using that resistance of everything from the capacitor inside there to the windings, and even the oil inside the capacitor, and even the metal container. Once it gets inside that container, it ain't got nowhere to go. So it pressurizes that container, and now you got power on demand. But you couldn't use that energy before that. You have to slow it down, and that's basically what I'm trying to say.
The way I'm thinking about it is it's not, like, shorted out. It's like resonating itself. It's a part of the line. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they got a deal on there called a lightning arrester, which portion of that lightning arrester hasn't got nothing to do with lightning. basically what it has to do with is that if that if you're not pulling power off that transformer, it could literally self-discharge. And you'd think it got hit by lightning. It didn't get hit by lightning, but in order to keep that transformer from ever overcharging, that lightning arrestor is also connected to the earth ground so that if it overcharged, it would literally leap across that gap and send that energy down into the dirt instead of into your house. What do you think?
Yeah.
So it's the same device. So if it gets overcharged by a lightning bolt, then it's guided towards the ground. If it gets overcharged itself, then it's guided towards the ground. So all they're doing is sending it where they want it to go. They're slowing it down, sending it to where they want to go, and with every other storage system, the more of those you've got, the more power you can store. You can use them just like batteries if you want. So we have all this technology. We know how to step it up. We know how to step it down. We know how to reduce the current and raise the voltage, or reduce the voltage and raise the current, speeding it up and slowing it down. That's what understanding energy will do. Is that simple? It's so ridiculously simple, man. You know, there's a lot of different stranded wire out there, but each one of these wires, they're not insulated in multi-strand wire. But if you could make one that was all, each and every individual wire from that strand was insulated from each other, and made the same cable like that, you could put high voltage in one side of that and run that wire into a thicker line on the other side and come out with current on the other side. You see what I'm saying? It's like those three pipes that I explained about, the three little pipes being put into the big pipe. One pipe by itself won't fill that void, but three of them together puts enough pressure inside there that will start backing up, and it'll actually produce now a current. Does that make sense to you? Did I lose you?
I'm listening.
So anyway, that's just a way to bring it back into usable current again, and even to the extent of changing it to plasma. If you can take and understand that, like, xenon is the brightest light that is put off of any of the noble gases. And so if you can energize xenon at a really super low input, now you got a lot of heat that you can actually transfer into different types of energy. Do you ever see the Easy Bake Oven?
Yes.
You know how that thing works, right?
Light bulb.
Yeah, it takes the heat off of a regular incandescent light bulb, and you can bake a cake with it. It's like trapping that into a little metal box and using that heat to work. Well, you could build a xenon bulb style freaking stove using that same technique and be able to cook things just like a regular conventional oven at a massive amount of less input, because of how much heat is actually generated by that xenon. The same thing with the neon. You know, it takes less energy to energize neon into the plasma state. Once you get that energized in the doggone little Bedini circuit where they got the neon bulbs in there to act as a shock absorber to that high voltage so it doesn't spike back and burn out the transistors. Feel those bulbs. They get hot. And at certain, when it is in the plasma state and it's getting too much power to you, they'll get really hot. And so it don't take very much to energize neon into plasma. And
yeah, I mean, the beanie wheel burns up neons like no problem. Too.
Yeah.
If you leave it sit there, it'll melt that thing down, which is kind of weird because those are pretty tough bulbs.
That's right. But now you got heat energy that if you're taking that heat energy away, if that glass can never reach its thermal breakdown, even though it's hotter than all get out inside that bulb because of the plasma, if you can cool that glass down fast enough, there's no way that that bulb will ever melt. Including the wires themselves. If you can keep those wires from ever reaching their thermal breakdown, they won't be able to melt. But you can transfer that heat energy off of those bulbs. So if you wanted to make a plasma water heater system, if you took a halogen bulb or a xenon bulb and you put it into a glass chamber that was under the water, you wouldn't be transferring that electricity through that glass. You'd be transferring the heat from that bulb through that glass. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And it would heat that water. So you could actually use it. It'd be kind of a cool-looking artistic thing. You could have a water tank, a hot water tank that you could see through, and basically using the xenon bulb to heat the water, and at the same time being able to use the visible light so you don't stub your toe in the bathroom. That's efficiency. And if you go look at my redneck hot tub video, you'll see what efficiency really does, because I'm using a coffee pot element to heat the hot tub, and that hot coffee pot element would get so hot if you didn't, after a while, it took 4 hours to get up to operating temperature. But once it got up to operating temperature, it took very little to maintain. I was able to sit in that hot tub in the dead of winter when there's snow outside, 0 degrees, in my shorts, in that pool, and not freeze to death. That's efficiency. And no insulation.
I've seen enough videos to know that, or what people are showing there on the internet, regardless of what people think is real or not, I'd be seeing these folks doing it. It's like, when you have the light bulb operating on the right kind of frequency energy,
yeah,
and it's still getting hot, you can put the whole bulb right down the wires and all down the water. It doesn't short out. You can put your hand down in there.
Yeah. But I'm saying for people's peace of mind.
I mean, that's kind of crazy. I mean, that's pretty wild. Because, I mean, from what I know, you can't run like current. You couldn't take like a halogen light bulb, especially a row of six of them, and have them all ignited so hot that, you know, they're boiling as they go into the water, and then, you know, put your hand down in there with them. You know what I mean? That's crazy.
Well, the key is with the halogen. If you've ever looked at whenever you replace a bulb in your automobile, you'll notice that the 99% of the time, the reason why that bulb went bad was either, number one, you put some oil off your fingers when you screwed that bulb in. You're not supposed to touch them, or if you do, you're supposed to wipe them down real good, because that heat will transfer to that oil and it'll actually cause the glass to crack. The other is that if you get a leak inside your cover that the light is actually in, and a water drop hits that hot bulb, it will instantaneously crack and burn the bulb out. So if you have the bulb in the water before you heat that up, it won't crack. You see what I mean?
Right.
If the temperature can rise up equally inside and out, then it won't crack. It's that sudden change of temperature which causes the bulb to crack. So you could make a halogen or a xenon or even a neon or argon water heater plasma system to where you're energizing the gas into plasma, which doesn't take that much energy to do it. Basically, a 12-volt Beckett oil burner igniter is too much energy to energize it. You don't need that much power input in order to produce the high voltage, high frequency necessary to get the gas energized into the state of plasma. You know, if you look, they got USB plasma globes. You ever seen those? You can plug them into your USB port, and it has a plasma ball. It's a toy.
No. I ain't seen that one.
Well, look it up on eBay. You can find little 5-volt USB plasma toys. You can find little 3-volt fluorescent bulb systems. Anytime you got a fluorescent bulb or a plasma globe like that, there's plasma involved in there. And there's heat involved in there as well. So, even at low voltage, you can energize these gases into plasma, which generates heat, which then in turn can be transferred into other usable energies that you want, heat and water or whatever. And at certain voltages and pressures, you can actually turn water into steam using plasma. Because at the heart of that plasma, it's hot. So, you want to talk about efficiency, that's why I keep talking about plasma technology. You know, and if you understand how that energy is transferring, you ain't got concerns like radiation or dangerous frequencies or whatever. You can recapture every bit of energy that you put into that doggone thing. It's ridiculously simple. I just don't understand why I do understand why, but it sounds conspiratorial every time I say it. The reason why they don't do things like I'm talking about is because they want to sell you fuel. They want to sell you electricity. They want to sell you drugs. They want to sell you whatever product they can sell you. And anybody who comes along that has a cheaper or a free product and they're trying to give that information out, what do you think's going to happen? Ted, that's why it's called mad science.
What?
Because it makes me angry. What I'm trying to tell people...
I can tell it does. Because I know it does.
Well, what I try to tell people, and especially if I start talking to anybody in the medical industry, I just had a conversation with a lady who is involved with hospice. You know, you're familiar with hospice, right?
Yes.
You know, they come in at the end of somebody's time and they try to keep them comfortable and medicated and cared for until, you know, they go, but whatever. And you're sitting there and you know that there's a cure for a certain ailment and you can't understand why it is that their doctors didn't take them to that particular style of medicine, knowing that this is technology that's available, instead took different routes, some basically just skirting the type of technology but never going to the full extreme of, you know, doing what they could have done to heal them.
It's real simple. I figured this out a while back. There's this handbook, American Hand Whatever Medical Insurance Coding Handbook. And that's literally how it goes. You know what I mean? You got XYZ symptoms. We're going to code it all up. Find out what's going on. It's like weirder than you think, bro.
Yep.
And then at the end of the day, it's like, well, you know, maybe if a doctor could afford to get through medical school in America without owing or being broke, then he could go start a business. And then on top of that, he could afford his own malpractice insurance. He could go open up his own practice and do whatever he wants.
Yep.
But guess what? I don't think there's but less than 1% of doctors graduating this year that will go in instantaneously after doing their residency and start their, put up all this money and start their own practice and teach and do medicine the way that, or do medicine the way they wanted to do it. They'll go to a hospital or a large office and they'll be instructed to follow the protocols and their diagnosis technique that falls right in line with insurance coding so that they can bill it.
Yep, meanwhile, people are dying.
It's not a conspiracy. That's exactly how it works. I've worked over there.
That's
I know
true.
How.
But meanwhile, that means that a person who needs a certain type of medicine can't get it because it ain't covered by this insurance or it doesn't fit these people's regulations.
It goes even farther than that. It means that the doctors, because they immediately came out from residency and worked at a similar institution, haven't even experienced that form of medicine themselves, so they don't even understand it themselves. So therefore, it's not even that if they knew about it, then they could just, the insurance, that's not even it. Like, they don't know really about hyperbaric chambers. They don't study it. You know what I'm saying? It's because that's not in their line of practice. They don't do that. They've never worked somewhere where their predecessors or proteges or the people teaching them how to do it better, the people that had the experience, they're not there making them that knowledge to begin with.
That's right.
If you graduate as a doctor, you could go and seek out the best doctor ever you could find and try to apprentice and learn under him more, you know, and move and do whatever it took, offer to maybe work for free for a couple months and see if he'd bring you on as a, you know, PA or some kind of thing. And it's like, you know, then, you know, it would be a possibility. But the way I look at it is that that's how it works. And so people want to get all mad at doctors and say they know medicine better, but it's like, well, in a way, it's kind of a shame that some people that don't even study medicine know a little bit more about medicine than some doctors. But that's just the way of the world.
Well,
you know, there's a lot of bankers out there, but trust me, there's a lot more people that know more about banking than the banker you're talking to at that given day.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I agree. And then the frustration comes from knowing how that system keeps them doctors oppressed. I'm not necessarily mad at the doctor. I'm mad at the system. I get that. But when you go to tell somebody, hey, look, here's this research. Look into this research. This could actually cure your patient. And because of whatever rules and regulations they got, they might not even look into it because they know they're not going to be allowed to do it anyway. And so you got a person dying from an ailment that is not necessary that they died from that ailment, or having amputations when it's not necessary for them to have amputations because there's a cure for it. That same thing applies. It doesn't matter whether we're talking medical, fuel industry, electrical industry, or any of the industries out there, food industry, even the same thing. The way that these people have monopolized this system, the way they put regulations in there to keep people from being able to say that some sort of alternative natural medicine is free and it will cure a certain disease, that's why our world is in the state of affairs that we're in right now. The oil industry is responsible for so many different wars out there. It's ridiculous. And it's not just the oil. It's diamonds. It's all the natural resources. It's gold. The greed for all these shiny objects and metals and the power of being able to be a multi-billionaire owning your oil fields and stuff like that is so, you know, incredible addictive that it gets, a lot of people to do a lot of dirty deeds in order to suppress anybody like myself who's trying to tell everybody, you ain't never going to be able to run out of crude oil. You're never going to run out of fresh water. You're never going to run out of trees or anything. There's nothing on this planet that you're ever going to run out of. You may kill off every single animal on this planet. You may kill off every single human on this planet, but until this planet stops doing what it has been doing since the day it was put together, it's going to rejuvenate itself. It's going to start off fresh. And if you're a believer in evolution, then you should already get that point. It is so long as there's a chemistry, a carbon-based chemistry out there, it's going to rebuild itself without you. And so we're fighting over resources that are unlimited resources.
It's the thing about it is that you said it, they'll do it without you. It's the selfishness of the humans that, you know, believe they deserve to be there to see it. It's like, well, you better get to work and you better start getting to work fast because it's time, you know, to start working on that now.
Yeah,
that's what I believe.
Our clock's ticking as far as us trashing our environment. The environment will repair itself. Nature's that powerful.
Like, let's be real. I mean, there's a universal order here. We're traveling through the universe, like, or through a galaxy or something. Like, there's a bunch of planets spinning around the sun. Like, there's fields around there. Like, things will change eventually anyway. You know what I mean? Nothing lasts forever. And, you know, to anybody out there, I mean, even including myself, like, nobody gets out of here alive. Nobody.
But for humanity...
You're only as good as your deeds. You know, the fruits.
Yeah, I get all that.
Your work.
For humanity,
that's what you are.
For humanity to ever...
I don't know that the billionaire mindset or people's mindset that really believes, like, you know, and being ruling over top of others or wanting so much more than other people that they live next to, it's like, you know, I don't know. I don't know how far that's going to get you, because nobody gets out of here. Nobody. I don't even care if they've got your head frozen in a cryogenic vat. Like, we got to
get out of here pretty quick. But either way, the only way for humanity to ever reach its full and maximum potential of what we could actually accomplish is for people to stop relying on somebody else to make decisions for them. We got governments and corporations and all those that are out of control, and they make their money by making sure that you're stupid. And that sounds rude, but it's the truth. If you don't know that there's a natural cure for something, you're never going to look into it. And even if you do hear about it, chances are, unless your doctor is the one that said it, most people will go through chemotherapy instead of trying hemp seed oil. And it's crazy. But if you paid attention in science class, like I did, and I've studied and studied and studied all my life, and I'm sitting here and I'm looking at this world in disbelief. I cannot believe that we have these problems here in the year 2018. I can't believe that people are paying astronomical light bills and the power companies are still adding more charges to the deal. And then the governments that come out and say you got to reduce your carbon footprint, when you show them a solution to it, it's ignored. And then when you tell the average Joe about it, they look at you all cross-eyed because they don't understand, because they didn't pay attention in science class. And because the government ain't doing it, if it was that easy, everybody would be doing it. Running your car on water was already done. It was done in the 70s. But unless the mainstream, somebody in a fancy white coat or, you know, position of a notoriety says it to anybody, then it's not possible. That's the problem that we got. And it's going to
take... Well, you got another problem. There's people out there that have white coats and all that sometimes come out and say it, and they don't usually have very fun times after that.
No. That's it.
Once you're in the PhD club and then you go against the PhD club, they get mad at you.
Yeah.
That's just all there is to it.
There's a doctor.
It's like a lawyer. You ever heard of a lawyer going up against lawyers? They will all turn their back on them. They will disbar them and ruin their life.
There was a doctor, a mainstream doctor, that put out an article about hemp seed oil curing melanoma, skin cancer. And you never heard about it on the mainstream media. They don't advertise anything like that because the people that are backing them financially, they got interest against, you know, anything that's going to empty out their wallet, so to speak. So that's what's going on. And it's going to take the average Joes to finally realize, I'm about to find that the one about the bug's life, the ant deal again. I've been playing that a lot lately because what that grasshopper tells them other grasshoppers, he said that the ants outnumber us 100 to 1, and when they realize that their way of life is over. That means they ain't got those servants anymore. And that's what needs to be done, is the people need to stop being servants to the people who are basically enslaving the world and ripping you off.
I mean, I'll be real with you, Ziz. I mean, I don't mind being a servant. I've been in the service industry since day one. Like, I'll never forget the first time somebody asked me to sweep up cigarette butts at age, like, 12. I thought it was demeaning. But eventually, now I understand
portion,
all of it.
That portion, Tim, is fine. And I agree with that portion.
Well, let me go a little further with it. I want to just take it a little further as efficiency, as a bigger system. Once we have the things that we need, the bare minimum stuff, which we pretty much have access to now, if we can only just get one step further with it, I believe people, like, I know one thing that connects a lot of people I know, no matter if they're into power or if they're into, you know, being power generation or, you know, being into, like, food or whatever, like, everybody seems to like agriculture. People love plants. A lot of people that I know love plants and animals and nature, no matter what they study or what their thing is. And I really believe that that's, like, a part of it. Like, once we come back to, like, a way of having what we need, people will be servants to the earth, like the Bible says, like, be stewards of the earth. We'll grow food for each other, and you won't have to pay me. Like, I already give away food today, even the way the economies are. Like, you know, you wouldn't even, like, people will do whatever they want in their passions, and I really think that would be, like, the peace on earth we're looking for.
Well, I agree.
And people will still be greedy, but they won't be as much in control, but they'll still live in their huge houses, and they'll still have their scams going on. You can't change free will,
well,
you know what I mean?
That, but I'm saying servants to your community, that's not a bad thing, even if somebody's making money off of it. Servitude to greedy industries that knew years ago that Tesla tried to give everybody free wireless energy. All you had to do is pop up an antenna, and you could put electricity in your house to run your lights and stuff.
Yeah, it's different when you're a free will. When you have free will to be a servant, and then when you're forced to be a servant, it's two different things.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. That's exactly, yeah. You explained it perfect. That's exactly what I'm talking about. And when you're under the gun, under the thumb of the power company, you have to pay your light bill, or they shut you off. And they don't care whether it's hot or cold, or you got food in the refrigerator, or your budget's low, or anything like that. They have the power to shut you off. And that kind of power shouldn't be available to any person out there, because it's essentially blackmailing. If you ain't got the money, if you're poor for some reason, you can't afford to have your lights turn on, then they won't turn them on. Well, I'm trying to show people how to turn their lights on without the power company, so that they don't have to worry about that. And even if they do have to use the power company, that they'll be able to do it in such an efficient manner that they'll hardly have to pay any money. You see what I mean?
Yes, sir.
Alright, folks, we gotta get up out of here, but you've been listening to the Mad Science Show. Ted, thanks a lot, man. It's always great when you come on here. I appreciate it. And so, basically, I hope you like this podcast. I hope you share it around with somebody. It's no good for me to just sit here and talk to myself. I mean, it's great having a conversation with Ted and everybody who's listening in right at the moment, but, you know, if this information, if you like it, share it. That's the big deal. Share it out there to somebody. Somebody can understand electricity or energy or whatever, and anything good comes out of this. It was worth my time. If anybody out there benefited, it was worth my time. I seen a comment in there, Anon4860 inside the chat room said, "You just answered so many questions I had about magnetic fields and voltages. Thanks." So I helped at least one person. Doggone it, that makes it worth my while. And I appreciate that. I appreciate people saying stuff like that. Not because I got some ego to feed or anything like that, but because I like to know, just like everybody else likes to know, that, you know, I'm doing some good, and it's appreciated. So, if you appreciate what I've done, share this podcast with somebody. I put it up there on the Auto DJ and out here on the podcast, and I share all the links with everybody so that people have access to it and then come back and listen to it again and hear all what we've been talking about. This is what we're trying to accomplish. Peace, hope, and love in the world. And it's as simple as understanding how things work and then working together to see how far we as humans can actually travel and work in perfect harmony with nature so that we all live comfortably and happy. When nature's not happy, you're not going to be happy. I'll tell you that. You can see that. Just all you got to do is go out there and look around. Don't let your governments pollute up your world. You know, let's get together and fix it. You've been listening to Mad Science. Take care, everybody. Go say hi to People for People Radio Network and check.
Stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one hand.
Ooh,
one hand.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one hand.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this? You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.